Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Going to shuffle stuff around here. Monday mornings are a little crazy because I've been off the air for a couple of days, so I kind of have to reorient myself and get back in the groove, get back in the zone, get back into getting back further from the microphone so I don't, you know, blast the levels in stereo and things like that. So, Gene, you know, if you ever hear me lacking in quality or I sound too different, you know, sound quality, you know, let me know immediately. Gene and I are about 1,000 miles apart. This is the beauty of technology these days. She's up way up in Northland, and I'm way down here in Milton, Florida, you know, on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. I keep forgetting to say Florida. Eh, maybe I'll fix my opening. Maybe I won't. It doesn't really matter. Point being, we've got a couple of hours. This is the new and improved Action Radio. So we're now at 3 hours from 6 in the morning till 9 in the morning Central Time, which is where I'm based. And I think, Gene, you're Central Time also. And for the East Coast folks, we're 1 hour earlier. So on your commute to work, you know, as you go ahead and, you know, sit in traffic for a while or sit on those trains, you know, you put your headset on, listen to Action Radio, and we'll get you all messed up. We'll start your day. We'll crank things into high gear, and away we go. So is it freezing up where you are yet, Gene, or are you still somewhat, temperate, as they say?
No, it's been beautiful weather here.
Wow. Well, that's good. Do you get, like, fall colors and all that kind of good stuff? You got
it's gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah. I miss that. Our trees actually turned down here about December. So, you know, New England, when I lived up there, we had just gorgeous falls. In fact, they're world-renowned for their foliage, and people, you know, make the pilgrimage from all over the world, go up to New England and watch the leaves. Problem is, it doesn't happen every year as well. Some years are just spectacular. It's only for like a week or so, and then it's gone, you know. And then you think, uh-oh, the fall foliage is wonderful, but immediately after the fall foliage, you get winter. And so it sort of, that's a little detriment. And although everybody loves the first snowfall, you know, the next 20 or 30 have a lot less novelty to them. Okay, let me sort of outline what's going on Mondays now. So Mondays, for now, I'm getting more reports. In fact, I've invited previous reporters that had to leave or basically were done with, you know, whatever they wanted to accomplish here. You know, I've invited some people back, and so we have an extra hour, and hopefully we're going to have more reports. We've got, I've forgotten exactly how many now. We've got lots, at least 10. And so hopefully we'll have, you know, 12 to 15 because we've got this time open now, 6 to 9. And so that's going to improve things too. We've got, you know, our webmaster, Eric Colley, who is brilliant, who's fixed up writeyourlaws.com, and will continue to make that, you know, a much better website, easier for you to use, to look up bills, to write bills, to, you know, comment on bills and all those things. So that's really the heart and soul of Action Radio is the legislation. And, of course, I'll be proposing tons more as we go. Just to give you a preview of coming attractions before we get into the title of the show today is Decertifying President Nobody, the Great Arizona Audit Results. And so I'm going to put my live chat on right now and see if anybody wants to see if folks are going to be doing that. This is new for me. I never did this during the show when it was just me before. Gene's made it possible for me to do this, but I never did it earlier simply because, you know, I was the one person. I was doing the board. I was doing everything, you know, playing the stuff. Okay, nobody's yet, but we'll see. But we'll see who wants to come on. Of course, the one speaker is us, Citizen Action. So we're listed there too. Problem is when I put live chat on, everything else disappears. That's okay. I'll leave it there for now. But you can do this. You need to have a free listener account, and that's easy to get. In fact, it looks like Gene's already on. So great, Gene. Thank you. I think it's in the upper left-hand corner. You get a free account, excuse me, with Blog Talk, and that will allow you to participate in the live chat. And so the reason I really love the live chat is because a lot of folks, you know, they for whatever reason, don't necessarily want to call the show. And so it's easier to be able to type it instead. People are busy. You know, you don't generally wait on hold a whole long time here because I try to get to calls as quickly as possible. So that's good. But if you like really disagree with me and you think I'm going to yell at you, okay, I'm not. I don't yell at people unless you're completely stupid and over time. Repetitively, you're unnecessarily argumentative, and you're wasting our time here. You keep repeating yourself. That will probably cause me to, you know, disengage, as they say, from the conversation. So, but other than that, yeah, you can be as controversial as you want. Yeah, I don't take well to swearing, so don't do that. That's not going to help you. You won't last long on our site if you do that. But please feel free to comment. We had a great commentary going last Friday. Basically, the person who hopped on said everything I said was wrong. And I thought, great, bring it on. Let's go. Let's talk about it. All right. So a couple, let's see what else. I think I've got most of my housekeeping thing. My massive list of things to do here. So, yeah, we've announced a new time. We got the live chat. Okay, let's get into it. Let's get into what's going on. Initially, and this is predictable. The news reports coming out of Arizona before the audit results were even announced, you know, CNN, MSNBC, the mainstream news, the traitors, you know, the people that are actively working to destroy this country with fake news, a narrative that is suicidal, and a bunch of other stuff that, you know, really takes them so far from the realm of journalists as to be unrecognizable. Okay, so they're not journalists anymore. And so what I'm hoping to advocate for conservatives, the counter to that, is instead of being conservative, objective journalists, because there is no objectivity and nobody particularly wants journalists, if you look at what the left is doing, is to become conservative news advocates. All right? And I've talked to some folks about this. It hasn't got a lot of traction yet, but it will. So what you'll find, I think, in the coming years, once they sort of realize that this is necessary to save our country, is that just as the left journalists have become propaganda outlets for the Marxists, they've been co-opted. You know, the Marxists do a few things. They take over education, they take over culture, that'd be Hollywood and, you know, stuff, and movies. They take over the messengers, and they take over the media. Okay? It's very, very common for this to happen. Look at, you know, Cuba, communist China, you know, Russia, you know, during the heyday of Stalin, there was no freedom. There's no media. There's no information. And so the beauty of the internet and why they're always trying to stop it is that there is so much information out there, and there's far more information than ever before, but you got to hunt for it. Anyway, so the message, the approved message that came out of the Marxist Politburo of the Democrat and the Republican Party, you know, the never Trumpers. I never realized how big the never Trump contingent was of the gelding old party until I started looking at what's happening with the stalling tactics and audit. I mean, it's huge. It is massive, the amount of things that people are doing to stop that. All right. So the story was that Biden had won the recount. Biden, you know, he won Arizona. Isn't that great? Yay. Okay. You can all go home now. Right. That's part of the coup. That's part of the misinformation. That's part of the sort of the put down to try and get you to think that nothing really happened in the Arizona audit. Well, a whole lot happened in the Arizona audit. You know, and in fact, I've got more results probably than you want to hear, but I want to document them. I want to get them on the show here because this will give people a chance to listen. It's kind of like an audio book. All right. So we'll give you enough information that you get a chance to really listen and see what's going on. All right. I tell you what, live chat, Gene, I'm finding live chat distracting. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take it off and let you be the live chat meister. And so that's because it's big and bright in my face. So if you can just let me know when something comes in, because I think I found I kind of like my schedule and my information, you know, as it is. That's a good thing. All right. So the report was, like I say, that Biden had won the recount. Well, if you recount the same fraudulent balance, you know, you're probably going to get the same fraudulent result. And that's exactly what happened. So people are reporting the fraudulent result as the real result. And that's not what happened at all. And so they totally, this was done before the actual presentations, which is kind of interesting. It's like calling a race before it happens. That's called fixing the race, you know. In other words, they used to do this. They would, you ever see the movie, Gene, do you remember the movie The Sting? Redford, Paul Newman, and Robert Shaw.
Right.
Okay, so in The Sting, they were what they called post betting, whatever. So in other words, they had a guy faking calling the race when they'd already known the results. So he basically, it was radio, so nobody could tell for sure. You couldn't do this today, but you could do it back then, right? So they announced it, so they'd call the race. So this guy was making up a race. They already knew the results, and so they'd bet like crazy on the horse that had already won. Okay, and that's how they're making all their money. And so it's fascinating. And this is pretty much what they're doing here, you know, in Arizona. The media is post, you know, whatever it is. They're giving you the conclusions before the actual announcement has been done, because that's what they want you to hear is the conclusion. And people are coming up to me, look at this. CNN said that, you know, Biden won Arizona. The audit, you know, that's what the audit says. Well, technically, they're correct, but they're not correct. And the way they're technically correct is, like I said, if you recount the fraudulent ballots, you're probably going to get the same fraudulent result. And that's pretty much what happened. They got like a couple hundred more Biden votes when they did that. But that's not That is not what happened. We'll get into what happened in just a second. Gene, have you heard that? Did you get reaction from people you know? Was there anything going up in the frozen north as far as that goes over the weekend and over or like, you know, when the process was being conducted Friday?
Well, since I'm on COVID restrictions, I can't go out of my dwelling.
That's right, yeah.
I don't know what people are saying. I just know that I was on one site yesterday, mm-hmm. and I was, well, maybe one other person out of the life, everybody else basically said that, see, Trump and Trumpster fans and Republicans or whatever nasty comments they made, how wrong they were, and that they're just out to destroy America, and they just don't want to give up the election. And so I just went on there and said, you know, how sad it is that this news organization did not tell the truth and a couple other things, but there's still a lot of people that don't believe it, that think that it's all a hoax and they're following the mainstream media and what they're told versus looking at all the facts.
You know, it's interesting. If you just look at this logically, you know, like I say, I'm trying to beat this into everybody's head that that your own brain is really your best resource. You know, that you don't need the official opinions of other people. I mean, it's nice to do that to get the information. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't just make stuff up here. I mean, I do have sources. But the thing is, I still like to look at things with logic and reason. And it seems logical to me that it was impossible for Biden campaigning from a basement with no enthusiasm, with no plan, with no driving agenda, with no inspiration to the American public whatsoever, to beat the most popular president, you know, certainly since Ronald Reagan, probably the, you know, in the last 100-150 years, who basically changed everything for the good. You know, he did make America great again, as I believe Ronald Reagan, to a certain extent, did. Calvin Coolidge really did in the 1920s. I mean, that's my model of Calvin Coolidge. Cut the budget in half, cut the national debt in half. That's what we need to do again, okay? And we'll talk about budget stuff later this week, too. I've been working on that. But the point is that Trump did amazing things, and he did things that no one thought was possible, which is what presidents are supposed to do, all right? It's like Ronald Reagan saying, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. And I really wish Trump had said, you know, President Xi, you know, or Chairman Xi, you know, let Hong Kong be Hong Kong. I did that campaign for several weeks, and I was running the Hong Kong press. I was trying to get some correspondence there, actually. We have a Skype line. I have to work on that this week, too, to get that going. But the point being that it was impossible intellectually to believe that Biden could beat Trump, given the situation of the two campaigns. That alone tells me that that Trump absolutely won. Now, I believe he won anyway, and I believe the evidence already shows that. But the thing is, intellectually, how do you rationalize that Biden was more popular than Trump and actually beat him, given the conditions of the campaign? That doesn't make any sense to me. Gene?
I think hate still plays a big role in it. People just hate him. Why? He's racist. And they'll say he's racist, and it's like, but Biden's not? Biden's more openly racist than Trump is. If you look at what Biden's done in the past and what he said in the past, mm-hmm. Trump has never said done anything. If you really look at what he says in totalitarian, but because of the mainstream media and or however you want to say it, the fake media, people latch on to what they're told, and they're sheeple. They don't listen or they don't find things out for themselves. They just believe certain things, and it's like, how sad is that? So I think it's just a lot of misinformation and hatred. People still can't stand him.
You know, it's interesting because they loved him when he was on The Apprentice. You know, they loved him.
But it's different because then he was a movie star.
Yeah, it's fascinating perceptions and how quickly they change.
Yeah.
You know, people think that masks, you know, where viruses are 1,000 times smaller than the space in a mask, okay? You know, people say it's like a mosquito going through a chain fence. I said, no, it's more like a mosquito going through a garage door, okay? That to me is a viable comparison. You know, to think that wearing something with space is big enough where, you know, metaphorically a mosquito could fly through a garage door is going to protect you is irrational, and yet millions of people are doing it. We announced that chloroquine kills COVID March 2nd of 2020, you know, 2 weeks before the 15 days to slow the spread, which of course didn't. It was there to perpetuate the spread so they could sell vaccines. But we were already on that. We had already called the pandemic a hoax and a crime, you know, before the slow the spread stuff even started, you know, and because it made sense. I had the study. I had the Dr. Dieter Rhodes study right in front of me, you know, so it was not hard to make that deduction. You know, and the other thing we called is that Trump won. November 4th. And we've always said Trump won. We never backed away from that. We've never gone, you know, even though, especially when I was on, you know, liberal Facebook pages, which I did for a while, I've given that up because it's a total waste of time. Because as you say, they hate Trump so much and they hate anybody that loves Trump, even though he was overwhelmingly popular across the country. But with the left, they're like, ah, you're an idiot, you're a conspiracy theorist, you know, you're this, you're that. And all I had was name calling. That's the best you've
right.
got. At least, you know, at least I've got evidence, okay? All you have is name calling. You know, and the fact that the media says, you know, Biden won, that's not a fact. That's a propaganda line. And yet that's what happened. So to all those detractors, to all those folks that, you know, called me crazy and called Action Radio nuts and tried to take us off the air, as usual, and I hate to brag about this, as usual, we were right. We were right that Trump won the election. You know, we were right that it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy. You know, to steal the country, you know, and the White House and the government and everything else, a combination of deep state Marxist Democrats and gelding Republicans. If you don't know what gelding means, look it up, okay? I just like using the word because it seems so appropriate. But this is what's going on. And we're still right. We're right that, Arizona just proved it. The results of the audit just proved everything we said. The results of the studies on hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin prove everything we said. And it's not just us. Their voices all over the country, they're just not being heard. So it's not a question of the information not being available. It is available. The problem is it's not being heard. And that's where the suppression comes in and the whole agenda comes in. But all those folks that think that Biden won, I would ask you, prove it. Tell me how. Intellectually, with logic and reason, show me how somebody that unpopular, that out of touch, that incoherent, that with a complete lack of support in rallies and anything else, how that person could be more, you know, more popular than Donald Trump and win, you know, more votes than anybody's ever won, win more votes than Obama ever won. He was one of the most popular presidents at the time. You know, now we know better. He's a segregation president. But prove it. You can't. You can't prove it at all. But anybody's welcome to try. You want to call the show 215-383-3832 at our new hour. I don't expect a lot of calls today simply because people aren't used to us being this, you know, and doing the show at this time, but that's okay. We can chat. Gene, what do you think? Comments on my comments.
No, exactly true. And all people have to look at the rally Trump had this weekend and how many people were there. Biden didn't even get 1% of that amount of people in every time he goes out somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Never. He never gets people that come and, you know, up to him. And I think it's because you just listen to him. He don't like America.
Yeah.
He can't get a coherent thought out. But that's not even the main point. The point is he don't like America. Look at how he talks. Look at what he's doing.
Well, he obviously hates America, but he loves power. And that was a comment Christina Bob made. Christina Bob on One American News has done unbelievable coverage of this. And she's really pointed out the heroes, Sonny Borelli, Wendy Rogers, some of the other folks that are there. Karen Fan to a certain extent, but I have a little reservations on her. Someone I'm actually in touch with, you know, on Facebook. Kelly Townsend, who's a state representative in Arizona. And so I was fortunate enough to be Facebook friends with her. So another connection way back. So, you know, I get her stuff when it appears on Facebook. It's hard to reach her now. I'd love to get her on the show, but, you know, we keep trying that. But the people are out there, you know, that are, they're doing, you know, the heroes work, the real heroes of this audit. Plus the cyber ninjas, the, Joe Van Pulitzer, the guy that analyzes the paper and the ink and everything else. Some of the other folks that I'll mention, Dr. Shiva, I can't pronounce his last name. So everybody calls him Dr. Shiva. All right, let's get into the article here. So, this is the best article on the summary of everything. It's a Maricopa County audit report, over 57,000 votes in question. Okay, you got to remember that Biden allegedly beat Donald Trump by about 10,000 votes in Arizona. See, they have enough to win, but they don't have a whole lot because they think it's not going to raise suspicion if it's only a slight victory. But that just makes it easier to prove that they were lying because, you know, if people are counting votes, if you got 57,000 fraudulent votes, and he only won by 10,000. You got 47,000 overvotes. So in other words, the fraud is 4 to 5 times larger than the margin of victory. Okay, well that's pretty powerful information. And although you don't have, and here's the thing too, people think, well, you have to account for every vote. You have to, count everyone and show, you know, was it enough fraud to overturn the election? Well, of course there is. But even if there wasn't, it doesn't matter. Fraud is fraud. If you cheat, and I used this example last week, if you take steroids so you can be faster in a race and you come in third, you know, you're not going to change who won or who came in second. But I mean, in fact, the person in fourth is going to come in third, but you're still disqualified. You know, you don't have to become in first, you know, to disqualify yourself, you know, for cheating. Okay, same thing here. You know, even if there were fewer votes, even if there are 5,000 fewer votes and Biden won by 10,000, if those are fraud votes, they're still fraud. You know, I mean, you might not decertify the whole state, but you're certainly going to decertify a county, and that might change.
Right.
Yeah, anyway, so the author of this article, Wendy Strauch Mahoney, September 24th, 2021, so that's Friday. That's when the audit came out. This is the single best source. It's in Uncover DC, okay, one of my best go-to sources, uncoverdc.com, okay? Wendy Strauch, that's S-T-R-A-U-C-H, Mahoney, because I don't know how much I'll get through. I'm going to probably stay on this article the next 2 hours. There's so much in it. Maricopa County Audit Report, over 57,000 votes in question. Okay, let's get into it. Arizona's Maricopa County Forensic Audit Report presentation began at 4 o'clock Eastern Time. So that was 1 o'clock Pacific Time. Friday in the State Senate, showing over 57,000 votes are in question. Again, that's, you know, well, I'm not good at math. If you have a 10,000 vote victory and you have 57,000, that's almost 60,000. That's six times the amount of votes, approximately, that are in question compared to the margin of victory. Maricopa, back to the article. Maricopa audit is just one county in Arizona, but is the fourth largest county in terms of population in the United States. So people think this is some little podunk county, you know, out in Arizona with a bunch of sagebrush and cactus, you know,
no.
and jackalopes. No, this is Phoenix.
Yeah.
Maricopa County is Phoenix, okay? I think the largest county in the country is the one where Juneau is in terms of size. And I don't think it's a population, but Juneau County or the county in Alaska where Juneau, the capital, is huge. You know, because there's so much space in Alaska that, you know, they don't need anything else. There's nothing out there beyond Juneau in that particular part of the country. But anyway, so the counties, yeah, don't be deceived by them continually saying Maricopa County. I wish they'd say, you know, Phoenix is Maricopa County. I think people would understand how big this is. It says the full report was Senate President Fan's letter to, you know, Attorney General Brnovich, that's B-R-N-O-V-I-C-H, can be found here. Now, I tried posting this article on Facebook, all right? And guess what? They said it was all fake news, okay? This historic document, this entire record of the audit report with quotes, with text, with screenshots of the presentations and the PowerPoints and the recommendations and the laws and all the violations. They call that fake news. You know, let me go to my Facebook tweet, where's where I tend to vent. Where's my Facebook section here? Too much stuff. Opening campaigns, announcements, guests. Facebook tweets. Here we go. I tried posting the letter from Arizona Senate President Karen Fan to Arizona Attorney General Brnovich. Facebook said this historic document is fake news. Do you believe that nonsense? They really don't want this story out there, but it's really out there. This is insane. Sorry, guys. So I'm going to read what you wouldn't let me post. Okay. And in fact, I told people on Facebook too. I said, don't worry, we'll cover it. This is why I love being the boss. This is so cool. I can do whatever I want. I can give you the honest news, and I can tell you the sources, you know, where they came from, and you can look it up yourself and you can share it. So be a warrior. It's time for you all to be warriors, okay? Get up and do something. Karen Fan, Senate President, 55th Legislature, 1700 West Washington Senate, Phoenix, Arizona, 85007, if you want to write them. Phone number, 602-926-5874. Arizona Senate, September 24th, 2021. The Honorable Mark Brnovich, Arizona Attorney General, 2005 North Central Avenue, Phoenix, Arizona. Report concerning the Maricopa County Forensic Election Audit. Dear Attorney General, this is a public letter, by the way, so I'm not reading some secret thing. This is out there. It's just, you know, the big tech doesn't want you to see this. Dear Attorney General, but Brnovich, B-R-N-O-V-I-C-H, I have attached the reports delivered earlier to the Arizona State Senate concerning the Maricopa County Forensic Election Audit. In the history of democracies, from ancient Athens to today, ours was the most detailed, demanding, and uncompromising election audit that has ever been conducted. The auditors spent more than 100,000 hours and millions of dollars reviewing ballots, voting machines, and data patterns. Arizona voters had serious concerns about their election, and they were entitled to the most careful and accurate answers possible. The auditor's final hand count, which quadruple-checked every single one of the 2.1 million ballots, matches Maricopa County's official machine count. Okay, that's what we told you about. So in other words, the fraudulent ballots were counted again, And so you get what I consider a fraudulent result. So in that respect, they match. And that's what everybody's reporting, okay? CNN et al., MSNBC, the liberal news, they're all saying, see, the recount didn't tell you anything. See, there's nothing there, okay? That's only part of it. Let me get to the rest of it. Back to the letter. The auditor's final hand count, which quadruples. Okay, all right, there we go. This is the most important and encouraging finding of the audit. Yeah, she's looking for good news here. So Karen Fenn said a while back that she didn't want to pursue decertification, but she's not going to have a choice because so many people are calling for decertification. Let me just briefly go over what that is, because Christina Bob had Wendy Rogers, who's really the one behind decertification. Okay, now I thought that would mean that the Biden votes would be taken back and that Trump electors would be put in their place. It's not that clear
no.
yet. Okay.
No.
Gene, what have you got on that? So what's decertification?
No, they're just taken back because you don't know. It was such a fraudulent election. How do you know if some of the people, the double or triple, whatever people that voted weren't Trump voters? And also there's no way to for some of it to go back and look at who voted what. And mm-hmm. so it just was very sloppily done. So there's no way that they should have certified it in the first place.
Right. Yeah.
So
that's objectively.
They're not just given to Trump.
Yeah. Now the state legislature can vote those Biden electors to Trump, but that's down the road a bit. And so what Gene's saying is absolutely right, that the decertifying means that the Biden electors are no longer certified. That vote is gone. So the Biden electoral count drops by like 11 or 12 from whatever, or 15. I'm not sure how many Arizona has. Gene, if you have a second, you know, dash over the computer and let's find out how many electors were talking, how many, and then find out the vote totals, the Trump. We're going to start doing a running poll here, a running tally.
Trump
here.
Lost by about 11,000.
No, what I'm saying is the electoral count.
I'm looking at that. No, I think they have about 12.
Yeah, they have. No, I think Biden has about 302 or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Trump has about 230, 40, somewhere in there. What I want to do is actually do the numbers of what's the count going to – if Arizona decertifies and they remove however many electoral votes from their total – where's Biden now and what does he go to? And then we'll figure out Georgia and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, which are the next ones likely to audit. So
Arizona has 11.
11. Okay. So can you quickly dash how many Biden and Trump, what was the end result of the election so far? Well, it's not the end. What's the result so far of the electoral count? Let's see. While you're doing that, I'm going to read a little bit more of the letter. This is that's all of having Gene on the show. We got resources now, people. We can do stuff. All right. Since the paper ballots in Maricopa County are the best evidence of voter intent because they are under 24-hour video surveillance and physical security, and there's no reliable evidence that they were altered to any material degree. This finding, therefore, addresses the sharpest concerns about the integrity of the certified results in the 2020 general election. Those are the paper ballots, okay? Well, the problems in Arizona, ironically, are not so much the paper ballots. I mean, they are in other states, you know, like in Georgia, where the woman, you know, drags a bunch of ballots from under a table after they had a fake water pipe break and sent the same ballots through the machine 15 times, all Biden votes. Gee, what a surprise. Okay. So the paper isn't the problem. And this is when people said the paper ballots, see, look, the recount, it says Biden won. Okay. You're missing the big picture. Okay. The big picture is, you know, that's, you know, I'm trying to think of a good example, but it's nowhere near as big as, that's not the problem. So let's go. It says, but importantly, and here's where the good stuff is, the audit also shows how we can strengthen our democracy. Several of the auditor's findings are concerning because they suggest less than perfect. She couches the language so much. Less than perfect adherence to Arizona standards and best practices. She says, in my view, the most urgent issues include the following. One, the signature verification process for absentee ballots is imperfect and requires improvement and additional testing. Signatures on mail-in ballots should not be accepted unless they closely match the voters' authenticated signatures that are on file. Two, voter rolls require constant, unrelenting maintenance. This process should identify and correct voter resignation, registration, voter resignation, that's kind of funny, voter registration information for individuals who move, are deceased, or registered more than once. Relatedly, records of voter turnout, ballots issued, ballots counted, and vote totals should facially, reconcile with one of us. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. F-A-C-I-A-L-L-Y. I'll have to look that up sometime. Reconcile with one another. Okay. So, like I say, she's not, you know, all in, you know, like Wendy Rogers is, and Sonny Borelli and Kelly Townsend and some of the other folks. She's holding back a little bit. And so that's what's happening here. Gene, just break in, you know, or try the hotel bell. You know, as soon as she gets the electoral count, and we'll.
Biden has 306, and my computer system here is running very slow today, so
that's okay. We got time.
I haven't gotten what Trump got, but Biden had 306.
Okay, so there'll be so 6 from 11, 75. That would bring him down to 295. If Arizona decertifies, if they take their 11 electoral votes. Got my math on that?
Yeah.
Okay. So 295. Now the vote count, the electoral count to be president is 270. That's only 25 votes more.
Right. Okay. We still got Georgia that, you know,
yeah.
Voter or massive fraud happened there. And mm-hmm. You can say, oh no. I mean, when people pulling out suitcases of ballots, after hours, that should have been thrown away right there.
Of course. Oh, yeah. And or at least that county should have been
yeah.
Banned. And of course, that's Fulton County. And Fulton County, for those that want to know, that's Atlanta. Okay. Is anybody seeing a pattern here? Big liberal Democrat cities? You know, you catching on to this? Anyway, so that's how that goes. Anyway, as far as voter records go, we have a bill. We always have a bill. And our bill, this is one that I wrote. For the Florida State Legislature, one, to get personal information off the internet, because people can look you up with the voter registration information. For some stupid reason, they made that public. In fact, they made it more public than your credit card can put online. You know, your credit card company can't put your personal information online, but the voter registration can. Okay, the you know government, other offices of the government, they can't put your stuff online, but the voter registration, the voter folks can. Okay, it's crazy. Name, address, phone number, email address. You know, party registration, birthday, you know, this is, you know, so that's the way to build to get rid of that. The other part two of that, there's actually three parts to it. The third part is if you use illegally obtained voter information in the furtherance of a crime, the sentence is increased. But the big part and the part that I'm realizing is probably more as significant as protecting voter personal information is the idea that voter registrations expire December 21st at midnight, 31st at midnight. Okay, so in other words, rather than try and correct, go through the huge lengthy process of trying to decide which votes are exactly correct, which voters are in the right place, they just expire. Okay, so voter registration would be only good for a year. All right, and this could work nationwide. So you know, well, do you have to register to vote every year? Why, yes, you do, because people move, people buy, people register in multiple counties, and of course, there'd have to be a connection to look for duplicates in statewide and nationwide. Right. People, you know, in fact, if people unregister one, you can do it with driver's license. If people move, driver's license should be an alert to the voter registration that, whoops, this person moved. You know, are they still registered in their previous, county where they live? So you can check all that. So voter registrations expire. You know, people, oh, it's such a burden to go down to vote. Really? Okay. Well, then don't vote. I don't care. In fact, I think fewer voters would be better. But, Gene, would you have any objection to going
Trump
every year to...
Trump got 232 electoral votes.
Okay, hold on. Let me get it just for a second, real quick. But would you have any problem registering to vote every year?
No, I think that's a good idea.
Okay. All right,
because
let's get to...
there should be something, because if put it this way,
mm-hmm.
people they should just not send out ballots to people. In the past, there's one place I live that I got an absentee ballot because I was going to be out of state. Mm-hmm. And the thing is with that, it's like I had to write them and tell them why I was going to be out of state. And I just couldn't say, hey, I want an absentee ballot or a mail-in ballot. And I think mm-hmm. that's what people need to do. If you're not going to do the voter registration, if you want to vote by mail, you have to physically write a letter.
Mm-hmm.
I would say write a letter. Don't even call. Write a letter and say, or get online and say, hey, I want a mail-in ballot, and this is why. There should be a reason.
Yeah, I don't like mail-in ballots. No.
But, you know, there's some people that need them. People that are homebound that can't go out to vote. You can't mm-hmm. you can't say, no, they can't vote just because they're housebound. You can't do that. And you can
no,
say,
I understand
well,
that,
they
but,
can't, you know, then they don't
but,
need to vote. No, they need
yeah,
to vote.
But,
if they have, that's their right.
But once it goes to the mail, you've broken the chain of custody from voter to ballot box. So what I would do is actually have the county officials go out and pick up those ballots. County bonded registered people, where it goes into a ballot box. The voter in their home puts a vote, their ballot, in a ballot box. It's treated just like a ballot box on the election. And I think the county should do that. Now, what do you do in the big cities? I don't know.
Wow, well, they don't even do it fair otherwise. I don't know. I can see a lot of illegal stuff happening there.
Yeah, but I don't want the post office. I don't want the post office handling ballots. Because the minute you do that, there's fraud. Because most post offices are staffed by union Democrat members. Guess which votes are going to get through? So the minute you break the chain of custody, the vote shouldn't count. So if it doesn't go directly to a county election official, you know, a registered county election official that is picked up. See, most people, I think there's very few people that actually can't get to the polls, who don't have any family to take them, who can't leave their house. You know, most, there are a lot of older folks who can't drive, but they can certainly have a friend or family member bring them to the polls, and they still get around. They just don't drive. Okay. When I'm 96 years old, I'm probably not going to be driving, you know, but hopefully I'll find somebody. You know, of course, the action rate will be a lot bigger by then, you know, but, you know, take me to the polls. Okay. And, you know, it's like you make it accessible. You know, it's like, you know, we have a Second Amendment that says you can own and carry firearms, but if you physically can't operate a gun, you can't exercise that right. So then what do you say? Well, you can't, you know, you can't physically exercise this right simply because you can't do it. Okay. Same thing with voting. If you absolutely physically cannot get there, there's no way to do this without going through the mail. You know, at that point in life, I don't know. I don't know if it's worth a Herculean effort. So I'd still say the county should go out and collect them. I don't like mail-in, but there should be a way to do this. But yeah, if you, and not everybody can exercise a right, even though you have it. Okay. So that's how I see it. It's more important to have the strength of the vote, be honest, and have the integrity of the vote than it is to make sure that every last person, you know, Herculean efforts. I mean, there's a certain point where, you know, and I don't know what that line is, where it's not working, that the risk of fraud is so high that just have mail-in ballots for everybody to make sure everybody votes. I don't know. Call me cynical, but, you know, I want to talk about that more. Gene, you had an electoral count. Trump was 232, you said?
Yes.
Okay. So let's play around with this a little bit. So if they just decertify, Biden goes from 306 to 295, and Trump is 232. So that's a 60-vote difference. If they decertify Biden, he goes to 295, and they transfer those electors to Trump. Trump goes to from 232 to 243. Okay, right? Have I got my math right? I'm doing this in my head. Gene?
Hold on. I'm doing the chat.
Oh, okay. Once you do the chat, I'll read more of the letter, then we'll get to these. All right. So I'm just getting, if my figures are correct in my head, I'm doing this. Okay. So 295 for Biden, 243 for Trump. That's like 50 votes, 50 electoral votes different. And those 50 electoral votes could easily be made up by Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. You could get Biden below you only need 25 to get Biden below 270. So you just need 25 votes yet. That's probably Georgia alone could do that. All right. Three, election. This is back to the letter by Karen Fan to Secretary of the President, President of the Arizona Senate, Karen Fan, to Attorney General of Arizona, Mark Brnovich. Election technology and machinery is too complicated and important to be overseen by amateurs. The audit found that Maricopa County failed to take basic cybersecurity precautions for securing election systems. Best practices and guidelines are published by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. That's the one I think that Chris Krebs heads up, that corrupt little dictator that said that this is the most secure election in history, that deep state operative, that deep state criminal, as far as I'm concerned. I think that's the organization. We'll check on that too. Anyway, it says CISA, which is available to counties at no cost. Well, there you go. In light of these failures, our state should have a specialist or team of specialists to ensure that strict cybersecurity protocols are always followed. That is not an unreasonable expectation when modern elections depend on cybersecurity practices. Okay, number four, no private company should be trusted with the keys to our democracy. That would be Dominion voting systems and others like them, okay? That's me, back to the letter. If a county doesn't even have administrator passwords for its vote counting machines, the county cannot properly monitor its own elections. Let me stop there for a second. Dominion voting machines. which had been proven to connect to the internet in Arizona. That's part of the results of the audit. Okay. They've been proven connect remotely to the internet. In other words, people don't even have to be there. They've proven that Arizona had multiple users on the same password. They didn't even know how many. They had the same password. You know, they had, they weren't tracking. They didn't have individual users and they had the same password. Go ahead, Jean.
I was going to say, and that's one thing, any job you have, especially when you're dealing with certain things, you cannot have the same password. So what, everybody that worked there, I would charge them all with something because you know what? They did something illegal. There's no reason why they did that. And yeah, you know why they did that. But I'm so glad those guys found a way around it and they can still charge people because they can look back and see who was in the building at the computer at that time.
Well, no, it's better than that. They've actually got surveillance tape of people on the computers. They did the timestamp. They check the timestamp with the security tapes, and they know exactly who did it. They know who was on. They know which Maricopa County employee was there screwing around with the election results. So they know who it is. I don't know who it is. They do. You know, I guess that's being referred to the Attorney General. We'll find out soon. You know, like we found out Lieutenant Michael Byrd assassinated Ashley Babbitt. Finally, which we find out. You know, it does come out. It's the nice thing about the truth. Eventually, it comes out. All right. So it says election technology is coming. Best practices and guidelines. Okay, let me just catch up where I was. All right. There we go. Five. And this is the last big bullet point here in this letter. Election officials must ensure that all evidence is preserved and that a top-to-bottom audit of an election is possible when warranted. That's part of the problem is they got rid of all the stuff. There's somebody that was on – we'll talk about this later when I get to it in this article – that somebody erased a ton of security codes and data and all kinds of other stuff the day before the audit. And they know who that is too. What a surprise. You know?
It's sad because if they're supposed to keep all that data for 24 months, and I could bet no one or maybe one person's going to get charged. Once again, we're totally different than what they are. They can get by with almost anything. But if some regular Joe off the street did it, we would be in jail.
Well, you got people off the street for doing nothing but walking through the Capitol January 6th, and they're called traitors and insurrectionists. And yet we have election officials who have been caught on videotape screwing around with the election results. Now, I think there's going to be some prosecutions out of this. I think this is the first of many dominoes that's going to fall. I'm not sure who will be next, but the states I'm looking at, Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Wisconsin's not a big state. I think it may have like 5 electoral votes, but Georgia and Pennsylvania are big states. And yeah, if you can look up those vote totals, Georgia and Pennsylvania.
And even Michigan.
Okay, well, yeah, but Michigan is that's run by, Witch Widmer. That's what I call her, Witch Widmer. So that's an obstacle there. Let's just, if you can look up really quickly, please, the electoral count of Georgia and Pennsylvania. Let's see how it is, what that is. And then I want to take that away from the 295 that Biden would have if Arizona decertifies and see if he gets below 270. That's what I want to find out. All right, last point, 5. Election officials must ensure that all evidence is preserved on top of, okay, I said that. The audit found that Maricopa County overwrote its entire activity log in the election management system. Let me say that again. The audit found that Maricopa County overwrote the entire activity log in its election management system. So what they tried to do is hide all their illegal activity, okay? It says this was accomplished by churning more than 37,000 identical queries several days after the court ordered Maricopa County to produce its election materials to the Arizona State Senate. Maricopa County also failed to provide documentation sufficient to reconcile duplicated ballots to corresponding original ballots, refused to cooperate with the audit, and directed its vendors not to cooperate with the audit either. Our laws should require transparency and affirmative cooperation from every elections official. Okay, let me explain the significance of 37,000 identical queries, okay? So what they did was there's a limit to how many activities can be logged in a system. I'm not sure how many it is. But every time you put one over that, it kicks out the first one, okay? So if you put 37,000 identical queries into a security, an activity log counter, it's going to kick out the first 37,000. Okay, so they figured out, I'm sure, how many it would take to lead up to Election Day, and those are gone. They're just gone. So covering up fraud is evidence of fraud. getting rid of the evidence. This is basically a destruction of evidence, okay, that they're required to maintain. That alone is enough to generate a decertification right there. In fact, any one of these things are enough, you know, evidence to generate a decertification. Combined is overwhelming evidence that they have to decertify. And they're calling for it. And I think the Arizona Senate's going to have no choice. But there are enough Arizona senators going for it. And she says, finally, Arizona voters deserve an unimpeachable, interesting choice of words, electoral process. And the state Senate is already working hard on new legislation to deliver that. She says, as the Senate enters the next phase, there are several items in the reports that merit the attention of your office, and therefore forwarding the reports to for your office's consideration and, if you find it appropriate, further investigation as part of your ongoing oversight of these issues. We thank you for your office's time and attention to this matter. Respectfully, Senator Karen Fan, President, Arizona State Senate. That was banned from Facebook, just in case you're wondering. Mm-hmm. What you got?
All right. Well, Pennsylvania has 20 and Georgia has 16.
That's it. That's all you need. So that's 36
votes. So then if you go 20, 16, and 11, that's 47 votes.
Okay. So 306 minus 47 is what? Minus 50 would be what? 256? It'd be 259, wouldn't it? My math sucks.
It should be about 260.
Okay, well, that's close enough. Yeah, so if Georgia and Pennsylvania decertify and Arizona decertifies, the Biden vote count goes to 260, the electoral count?
Sorry, what did you just say?
Okay, if the Biden's electoral count is, well, let me do it myself here. Let's do this together. So I'm up with you. My math completely sucks. That's why I do words. So he was 306. So we take away 11 Arizona votes, 295. How many? Georgia has 16?
Yes.
Minus 16, 279. And Pennsylvania has how many?
20.
Ooh. 259. Yep. There you go. So Biden, if three states decertify their election, his electoral count goes to 259. 270 is required to be president. Sorry. What do you think happens then, Gene?
We're worrying for a mess then, because it'll be interesting to see. Then I would say that the military does take over.
No. Military.
Yeah,
not
because
take over.
They can't take it away. They can't take it away from Biden and give it to Trump. And so then I would say the Supreme Court possibly, but they aren't going to do anything. And so then the bottom line is that we're still stuck how things are now.
No, see, and that is differently. First of all, you never want the military in charge of the citizenry, okay? Military serves the public. They do not rule the public, all right? That's a military dictatorship. I'm not going to replace one dictatorship with another dictatorship. That makes no sense. And
so the idea that,
and the other thing is you don't need it, okay? Look at who's running the military now, Mark Milley? You think Mark Milley's going to kick out Biden? He agrees with him. Who's going to do it? Who's going to do it in the military? I don't want them anyway. You know, the military is not elected. Of course, neither is Biden, which is why it's so easy to get rid of him. No, I think the pressure on the Supreme Court would be overwhelming. I think the pressure on Congress. I think the pressure to decertify Biden before the 2022 midterms with Trump cranking the country up. You know, what do you think the cry is going to be? Kick him out. Lock her up. You know.
Well, did you see us in Europe? Hillary was over in Europe.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. She should stay there.
Well, no, they don't want her. They were chanting things to her. Oh, it was, mm-hmm. Yeah, what I saw was not, yeah, it wasn't like a warm, fuzzy welcome.
Well, she's a criminal, and they know it. They don't want her. Right. They don't want her any more than people wanted, you know, Imelda Marcos or some of the other, you know, criminals out there. Yeah, let me, I got some more stuff I want to get here, but I think it's a good time for us to take a little break and play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for this week. This will be the last time I play this for a while. You can get it on our Facebook page. on our YouTube channel, Action Radio Founding Moments. So actionradio-foundingmoments will allow you to get to this. And this is Federalist Paper number 5. Of course, this week I'm going to do Anti-Federalist Paper number 5. So sit back, take a listen, drink your coffee, and we'll be back in about 6 minutes with more exciting adventures in the Arizona audit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist Papers number 5. Once again, we return to the elitist national government promoting and future Supreme Court Chief Justice John Jay. It's hard to imagine any of his court opinions were of much use, given he returns to his favorite tactic of starting with a false hypothesis, using a false comparison for evidence, and making up his predetermined conclusion with absolutely no progression of evidence to prove his case. His basic premise is that since England and Scotland formed an entire and perfect union, which is something he got from a letter by Queen Anne back in 1706 when the states were mere colonies, that we could do exactly the same here with our states. He was, in fact, modeling our oppressor to use as evidence that we can have as good a union as England and Scotland. I guess John Jay had never heard of William Wallace and the various troubles between England and Scotland over the centuries. I wonder if, like General Milley, he knew his counterpart in England. The reason this is a false comparison is that England is a monarchy and therefore irrelevant to comparison to our states under the Articles of Confederation. Their people aren't even citizens. They are subjects. Scotland has been under the thumb and control of England also for centuries, as the King of England is also the King of Scotland. So again, this is hardly a voluntary or equal union, as are the states under the Articles of Confederation. From royalcentral.co.uk comes the current title of Queen Elizabeth II, which reads, Elizabeth II, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of her other realms and territories, Queen, head of the Commonwealth, defender of the faith, with the style of Majesty. One has to wonder if John Jay was secretly a monarchist, and not just an elitist national government proponent. He never speaks of individual rights, and only of a strong national government with a strong national defense to defend against all enemies, real or imagined. Which brings us to the false evidence and made-up conclusion. He argues that the only way the states can defend themselves is to be under a strong national government, and that is why 3 or 4 confederacies that might form without a strong constitution would make America indefensible. And yet, the colonies, before the Articles of Confederation, threw off the oppression of the British monarchy John Jay is using in Federalist No. 5 for the model for our new nation. I'm sure this did not win him converts. He repeats himself again in this paper when he writes, "It was remarked in the preceding paper that weakness and divisions at home would invite dangers from abroad, and that nothing would tend more to secure us from them than union, strength, and good government within ourselves." He doesn't define or describe the 3 or 4 confederacies he tries to convince us the states will degenerate into if the Constitution is not passed. This is directly countered by the 13 individual states at the time of this paper, which were operating rather well as one confederacy. But John Jay is convinced that he can generate the fear with this bogus argument to scare people into running to a national government for safety. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Why else would he make all this stuff up? John Jay does define one of his confederacies by saying, "The North is generally the region of strength, and many local circumstances render it probable that the most northern of the proposed confederacies would, at a period not very distant, be unquestionably more formidable than any of the others." This is rather prophetic and ironic that the Confederacy of the Civil War formed under the very Constitution John Jay was arguing would prevent such confederacies. Jay writes that each confederacy would be as distinct nations with individual treaties with foreign nations. Of this, he said, hence, it might and probably would happen that the foreign nation with whom the Southern Confederacy might be at war would be the one with whom the Northern Confederacy would be the most desirous of preserving peace and friendship. He always writes of conflict that might happen, but he never acknowledges that his fears are never realized by the states while operating under the Articles of Confederation, or that the states had a mutual support and friendship pact through the Articles, such that if one state was attacked by a foreign power, the other states would immediately rush to the defense. The colonies had neither an army, a navy, nor a national government, but created a continental army and navy nonetheless, and won independence from England. This goes against the doom and gloom of Jay's imaginary scenarios of why something that is working won't work. So what exactly was John Jay talking about? Seems to me he has a predetermined conclusion in search of evidence and comparisons that don't exist. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Action Radio. Dangerously cool. Oh yeah, we're back. I love doing those pieces. It's a good chance to learn myself about the our founding documents. This is a multi-year project going through all the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, you know, the Constitution, the Articles of Confederation, the Mayflower Compact. I mean, who knows what else I get to. So it's going to be very interesting to do that. Gene, I wanted to direct everybody to the live chat that appears on your webpage as you're listening to the show here. Gene had doing, God's work here with Bumper Jack number 5, or he didn't say number, Bumper Jack 5. Bumper Jack 5 has made all kinds of comments. Bumper Jack 5, first of all, thank you for contributing so much. You've given us so much to react to, and I really appreciate having your comments here, even though I completely disagree with you. But it's nice to have you there on the show. Okay, so live chat. If you haven't signed up for your free listener account, do that. I think it's in the upper left-hand corner. Gene, you can tell me for sure at some point. It's hard for me to look at the other stuff while I'm doing this, but just get a free account with Blog Talk Radio, and that'll allow you to participate in live chat. So Bumper Jack, first thing he says is, why is it impossible to believe Biden won when Trump lost the popular vote in the last election by 3 million votes? That's very interesting, because the popular vote is meaningless. There is no popular vote. It doesn't matter. It doesn't count. The only reason that they have a vote in the states is to determine the state electors through the Electoral College. Okay, the Electoral College actually votes for the president. What you're doing when you vote in a presidential election is you're voting for your state's electors. Okay, now obviously that is a popular vote. In other words, by the people, the person who gets the most popular votes should get, you know, is really morally bound to, although not required, but they're morally bound to vote for the person that the state voted for. They're never going to be an elector again. So that's generally, now there have been objections. People have done that. In fact, after Trump won the election, there were a lot of death threats made against electors to try and force them to change the vote, their proper vote from Trump to Hillary, fraudulently, because she wanted to win so badly and that she was willing to, tolerate death threats of Trump electors. All right. So the thing is, the popular vote means nothing. The national popular vote means even less. And the reason is because the Electoral College is the way this country is set up. See, people forget we're not a democracy. Okay. Democracies suck. They do. You know, Republicans is the way to go. And the whole point of the Electoral College is to spread the vote across the country so that we don't have Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago in Miami deciding our elections, because the leftists would always win. And that's what they talk about, the popular votes. Now, citing, you know, 3 million, won by 3 million votes, I think those 3 million came from California. Well, California allows illegal aliens to vote, not officially, but of course everybody knows it's easy. They give away driver's license to anybody by not checking IDs and citizenship, and they don't check IDs at the polls. So the idea that 3 million, you know, probably 5 million, maybe even 10 million, you know, fraudulent votes coming out of California would not be a surprise, okay? So you can't count that, right? And it doesn't matter anyway. So whether California wins by, you know, millions upon millions of votes over Trump or five, they still get 55 electoral votes, which, of course, is way too many. That'll be cut back next time because California is losing so many people. And, of course, once they stop counting the illegal aliens as citizens, they'll lose even more votes. And California will gradually reduce its electoral power. Gene, you want to comment on that, or shall I proceed to Bumper Jack's next?
No, you can continue on.
Well, thank you. All right. This is fun. I'm having way too much fun, but I don't want to, you know, appear to be just rambling for too long here. Bumper Jack then says, no, I'm talking about the election between Trump and Hillary. Trump lost the pop. Oh, I already read that one. Okay. So Biden refused to have rallies because of the COVID, but that didn't affect his votes. what do you mean refused? Is he a coward? First of all, COVID is a 99.9 or 99.5 to 99.9% ineffective rate. Okay, so COVID is ineffective, maybe up to moderate symptoms at worst, at to 99% of the population. Of course, you have other people that are more seriously affected, things like that. But for the most part, you know, COVID is no big deal. We lost 42,000-43,000 people who actually died from COVID. Here's where Bumper Jack's going to hop on again. Died from COVID, but the CDC reports those who died with COVID, like that couple that was murdered, and they had a COVID positive test like within 26 days, and their reporters dying from COVID, even though they were murdered. So don't trust those figures for a second. The CDC reports that only 6% of the people that they report as having died with COVID actually died from COVID. Do the math. 700,000, 6%, that's about 42,000. All right. Let's end that argument. So the idea that he refused that COVID's an excuse. Okay. It's not a reason. COVID was used to blame, well, we have to lock down because of COVID. Okay. But we're going to keep Walmart open. You know, we're going to keep the department stores and the big food stores open. You know, Amazon's going to deliver door to door, you know, to people's homes. Okay. You know, but so all those things, government offices, they're not closing. They're essential. So COVID is a way to get rid of the people that you don't think are essential because you don't like them, small business, independent people, things like that. And so not having rallies was stupid, was dumb. It proved that he wasn't that popular because COVID was a farce anyway. I mean, the virus is real and the vaccines are dangerous. We know that. But as far as not having a rally because of COVID, that's insane. Nobody stops a rally for the flu. And the flu killed twice as many people last year as did COVID. And COVID's been around for – they're measuring, you know, 42,000 deaths from COVID over almost 2 years now, right? And flu kills like 80,000 people every year. And that's with the flu shot. How am I doing, Gene?
We didn't have flu last year.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. We didn't have – so was flu canceled? Did the CDC just cancel it? I mean, I keep forgetting.
Well, I guess they cured it last year because, nobody had flu.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. And then Bumper Jack goes back to say that Hillary got more votes than Trump. Again, the Electoral College. We are not a democracy. We don't have a straight vote of the leftist big cities running our country. The founding fathers, in their wisdom, spread the vote over the entire nation. I mean, that's to our good. That's why we have a representative government and not an open democracy. If we had an open democracy, then everybody would just take a poll on the vote. You know, the problem is the House, when they voted on Trump's second impeachment, was basically a poll vote. You know, Nancy Pelosi says, how many people think Trump should be impeached? And all the Democrats dutifully said, yes, we do. That's not in a republic. That's a sham. All right, let me see what this is going. Gene's got some great answers here, too. You guys can check that out. I'm thinking one more Bumper Jack comment, and then I'll continue on. Oh, he says, I watched the returns, and they didn't stop counting. You must have gone to bed early, Bumper Jack, because they did stop counting. They stopped counting for several hours. Not only did they stop counting, they all stopped counting at the same time. Across the country, it didn't matter the time zone. They literally stopped at the same time, and that's when everybody was sent home. The observers were blocked out. The cardboard went up, you know, the fake pipe that burst, and all the other stuff. And that's when the fraudulent voting was done. Of course, it's all on videotape. All right. So he says, where's the proof these votes are fraudulent? Oh, I don't know. Several thousand affidavits. Several, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of hours of videotape. You know, it's all been broadcast. You just haven't seen it. Okay. So because you don't look at the proof doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Okay, that's like saying the earth is flat because you've never seen that it's round. only because you haven't been up in a mountain and seen, you know, and take a look, and you can see further from a mountain than you can from the beach. Why? Because the earth is round. The higher up you get, the further you can see. That's how they proved the earth was round. It's just that simple. Gene, you ever hear about that experiment? They had three cannons, right? They had a cannon on the beach, a cannon midway up a mountain, and a cannon at the top of the mountain.
No, I did hear that.
And they're watching the sun. Yeah, I think they're watching the sunset, right? So when the sun set on the beach, they fired the cannon. Well, sometime later, the sun set for the middle of the mountain. Then they fired the cannon, you know. And then then when the sun finally set for the person on top of the mountain, they fired the cannon. And they're far enough apart, you could actually find the circumference of the earth based on the heights of the cannons, you know, and when they fired them, okay? And that's how they proved the earth was round. Because there's no – if the earth was flat, they all would have seen the sunset at the same time. They didn't. Higher up you are. The only way you can see the sun setting higher up is if it's at an angle, all right, at a steeper angle. Yeah, you know, so but if you sat on the beach and said, oh, see, the earth is flat, the sun just set. here are two more cannons going off later, you know. That's just ignoring the proof. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means you're not looking at it. I think that's about all I want to cover on that. All right, well, you want to comment on Bumper Jack?
No. Okay, here he just said that 600,000 people died from COVID. Oh, my God. You know,
Did I just cover that?
I'm so tired of this. No, they didn't. I mean, it's a known fact that they just inflated the numbers. And just like you said, how many other things did they die of? But just because they had COVID, they said, oh, they died of COVID. They were in a motorcycle accident, died on the road. Oh, COVID. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, I'm not even going to respond.
No, that's okay. No, and once you've had enough responding, you don't have to respond any further.
No, I was just going to say something on air, but I'm not even going to say that because it's like you can't talk to some people because they don't want to know the truth.
No, but I want him typing in his messages because there's a lot of people who he represents, and that's what the value of Bumper Jack is, that he's allowing other people to see his views, and I want those views, and I want to be able to dispute those views. So, but like I said, if you get tired,
it's just the liberal head talking point. Mm-hmm. There's nothing original. It's just liberal head talking point stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, actually, so that's a really good point. You know, if there were some original voices, I think it'd be a lot more interesting to be able to take, but they're not. So that's okay. So again, it's up to you. You know, you can respond as much as you want, but once once you've said your bit and I've said my bit, then we move on. All right, here we go. Let's go back to the report from this is from a letter to Brnovich. This is Attorney General Brnovich from Karen Fan, President of the Senate. This is back September 24th. I guess this is in the letter summary. It says the independent audit team presented their findings with Senate President Karen Fan. this is news. This is from the article.
Okay, now he's got another one. You want people to believe 60 courts turned down the lawsuits because there was evidence there? Well, we all know that because of certain places are not going to look at certain things because it's not in their jurisdiction. And that's why it's usually sent down to a different court.
That's like saying you don't have standing. That's Jonathan Mosley explained that. Jonathan's our legal expert. Explained very clearly that just because a court doesn't take it up, or they say you have to have standing, these are made up procedures. This standing, you know, and these other things that the court uses to dismiss, they're not valid. They just made it up. That's what most of the courts do. Now, as far as the ridiculous argument that the courts thought that, you know, didn't refuse to hear these cases because there's no evidence, the courts refused to look at the evidence. Okay, so this is very well known, very well documented, that courts all over the place are cowards and they put their head in the sand and they just absolutely refuse to do what their job, you know, demands that they do, which is hear these cases, okay? So they didn't even hear them because they didn't want the evidence presented because they're either deep state, co-opted, bribed, or somehow incapable of actually being objective enough to follow the procedures. So the courts refused to take the cases. It's not that there wasn't any evidence. The courts refused to look at the evidence, just as, you know, Bumper Jack and other folks are refusing to look as well. All right, let me hold off on Bumper Jack for a while. I'll get more of this article here. This is Maricopa County Audit Report for folks that are just joining us in the 7 o'clock hour. We've been here for an hour already. You know, set your alarms earlier. You can get the full show. Maricopa County Audit Report, over 57,000 votes in question. Wendy Strauch Mahoney, and this is Uncover DC. We covered the letter in the first part. The article continues. The independent audit team presented their findings with Senate President Karen Fan presiding. The Senate Republicans chose an audit team led by Cyber Ninjas CEO Doug Logan and Ben Cotton of CIFIR. That's C, lowercase y, capital F-I-R. Data analyst and inventor Dr. Shiva Iadurai? Dr. Shiva, we'll just call him that, also presented his analysis of several facets of the audit, including findings on duplicate ballots and ballot envelope images. Senate liaisons Randy Pullen and Ken Bennett both presented. Bennett reviewed pertinent election laws and statutes toward the end of the presentation that could force compliance by the county to adjust the number of votes. Ooh, let me read that again. Could force compliance by the county to adjust the number of votes. In other words, dump the fraudulent ones and only count the honest ones. Senator Peterson, this is the Arizona State Senate, right? Senator Peterson also presented for the hearing, spoke at the end. He mentioned the constant obstruction to the audit, ostensibly spending, he said, hundreds of thousands of dollars to fight the process of an independent audit that was by and large supported by the citizens of Arizona. Peterson identified many critical issues that need to be addressed, some of which are criminal offenses. First, the obstruction of the audit. Next, the numbers do not reconcile. Next, it appears they broke the law with duplicate ballots. Next, we need to hold people accountable for the mistakes. And he says there are significant chain of custody issues. He says there's failure to preserve data files. He says there's cybersecurity weaknesses. And it says signatures are missing on the envelopes. That pretty much is the fraud. So if you want a little encapsulated nutshell, those are the problems. And we're podcasts, so if you miss it the first time, listen in. And these, in fact, anybody wants to get a chance to do this, the two things you should listen to. One, the Trump speech, especially with Herschel Walker, who was brilliant. He really impressed me. I've never heard him speak before, but he's going to be a fabulous Senate candidate. And the other, of course, is if you can listen to the actual reports presented, in front of the Arizona State Senate Friday, I'm sure the video, don't look to social media to find it. You'll have to kind of look on your own, probably Rumble or something like that. Okay, so let's move on here. I got a couple of little things, a couple of little numbers for you for your number crunchers. Gene, got anything anything from our live chat or?
Oh yeah, just
anything on your mind?
He also said that the judges were Republican too. They were deep state too, huh?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yes, the Republicans are deep state too. Why do you think I call them the gelding old party? The GOP is the gelding old party. See, here's the thing that the folks like Bumper Jack don't realize, that I have been, as critical of Trump since he got completely co-opted and lied to, back the last good thing he did was to ban flights from China into the United States because of COVID. Okay, that's the last good thing he did in terms of pretty much anything. The entire rest of the administration was completely destroyed by the Obama playbook that were really instructions to Dr. Fascist to totally take over the Trump administration, sabotage it, and make it vulnerable in the election, while at the same time locking down the economy to destroy it so that Biden could come say, look, Trump destroyed the economy, when in actual fact it was the Democrats and Republicans too who actually shut down the economy, made people wear masks, and then used COVID as an excuse to do mail-in balloting and other fraudulent things. Okay, Gene, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that remember when Trump did ban, people from China and stuff coming over, and how Pelosi and all them reacted about how evil a person he was.
Racism.
Yeah.
I want an echo button like Joe Pags has, because when he says racism, it comes back in an echo chamber. It says racism. So I have to do it myself. All right. If you look at the article that I've been mentioning over and over again in Uncover DC, this is the findings summary table below, provides a quick overview showing over 57,000 illegal votes. And for Bumper Jack, here's your proof, dude, okay, is right here, or dudette, depending. We don't know for sure. 57,000 illegal votes, almost six times, this is what I said, six times the margin of the 10,457 votes tallied on November 3rd for Biden. So they tallied the votes, but of course, we know the true story of them. So that's a pretty good guess. So there's six times the amount of vote fraud documented than the margin of victory. So there you go, Bumper Jack. There's your evidence. And there's going to be a lot. Well, I mean, that's not it. I mean, obviously you have to read the actual evidence. So here's some. Mail-in ballots voted from prior address. Okay. That 23,344. So people who voted from the address they're not living at, we got 23,000. 344 votes there. Potential voters that voted in multiple counties, 10,342. More ballots returned by voters than received. Okay. So this is 9,041. So basically what happened was they got 9,000 more ballots back than they mailed out. It's pretty amazing. Election Management System database purge. Oh, that's not, let me get the next number here. Official results do not match who voted. 3,432. More duplicates than original ballots. Well, that's interesting. How do you do that? How do you duplicate something that was never an original ballot? 2,592. In-person voters who had moved out of the county. So in other words, they moved out and they walked back in just to vote. 2,592. In-person voters, voters moved out of state during the 29-day period preceding the election, 2,081. Missing ballot, next number here. They have a lot of NAs here. Votes counted in excess of voters who voted, 836. That's pretty amazing. Voters not part of the official precinct register, 618. Ballots returned not in the final voted file, 527. Duplicated ballots, incorrect and missing serial numbers, 500. Mail-in ballots received without record being sent. Gene, how do you do that? How do you receive a ballot that wasn't sent? 397. Voters with incomplete names, 393. I mean, I could do this all day. Deceased voters, 282. And it goes on and on and on to the vote total of 57,000 illegal votes. Pretty cool stuff. All right. According to Patrick Byrne with the America Project, this audit has been the most comprehensive and complex election audit ever conducted. It involved the hand count of approximately 2.1 million ballots with a forensic paper inspection and a forensic review of the voting machines. Most important, an in-depth analysis of the voter roll and the 2020 general election final file. 57,000 votes and 734 ballots with serious issues were identified in the audit. Improper voter, including improper voter registration, improper voter discrepancies. This is a conservative estimate. So here's the thing. Patrick Byrne, who was the chair of Overstock.com, made a fortune with Overstock. He funded a good percentage of this audit. He's like our George Soros. He's the good guy, right? George Soros is evil. And a few other folks, a lot of Americans, contributed to this audit. Guess who didn't contribute to the audit at all that I can see? The Gelding Old Party. Where's the Gelding Old Party? They do nothing to help with this. I guarantee if the Democrats were conducting a forensic audit, I guarantee you that party would contribute millions of dollars to it. They wouldn't think of it. And they said, Exactly. But it's just the Republicans can't object to the Democrats publicly if they're not willing to put some money into it, because that's just makes no sense. It's like the Republicans that say, Democrats are spending too much money, we can't have the stimulus, we can't it's gonna crash the national debt. They're gonna vote for the debt ceiling increase. Okay, all these people that are complaining against Biden, it's meaningless because you voted for him after in the evening of January 6th when you should have been voting to have the electoral challenge continue. You screwed it up. So what they actually vote for and what they say are two totally different things. But the Gelding Old Party is missing in any respect from this audit. They are saying nothing about it. Where's the daily press briefing from Kevin McCarthy? Where's the at least weekly press briefing from Mitt Romney's niece who's the chair of the Republican Party? Where was any press conference doing anything with the Arizona audit from the Republican Party? Name one. I can't think of one. If you're arguing with Bumper Jack, just tell me. I understand.
I quit responding because he's just going in circles.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, and that's what happens. We do the same thing with callers. When callers start repeating themselves, when you saying something more than once doesn't make it have a stronger impact. Okay.
With me though, it's like have an original thought. It's like where's the proof? Now the last thing was the state election people debunked all that. It's like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. A lot of them did. Look what happened in Arizona and look what we found out. So it's like, a lot of them are in on it. And that's what people don't realize because you're not looking at all the news. You just look at mainstream media or mm-hmm. get on wherever you get your news from and look at the talking points and then blurb them out. It's like, instead of finding out the facts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I think you're absolutely right in terms of getting original thoughts. That'd be wonderful. I mean, we can quote pretty much all the things that Bumper Jack and other folks on the left are going to say because we've heard them all. We hear them. They're on the news every day. They basically tell you what to say, and then you repeat it here like it's going to be somehow meaningful to us. I like your point of view because I like to have it, but in terms of changing my mind, ain't going to happen. Okay, Dr. Shiva, back to the article. Dr. Shiva was responsible for the analysis of the ballot images, which were handed over only recently due to resistance on the part of the county. Now, I don't know about you, Gene, but to me, the more they resist, the greater the admission of guilt that they have something
exactly.
they don't want you to know. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. had a feeling you'd be on board.
The bottom line is this. If it was a fair and an honest election, then they'd want, they'd like, oh, sure, you can look at all our books. But, you know, just even to find out that they don't even have the logs, there's no chain of custody for all those days, it's like, really? And why are they still allowed to get by with that? Obviously, whoever was in charge of the whole election in that area, they need to be fired and never be allowed to even touch foot in a place that where they assist with election stuff in the future.
Yeah, they need to be actually arrested, convicted, thrown in jail for a while, and then fired. get that permanently, yeah. In fact, you can ask Bumper Jack, you know, that question. Is that, oh, I forgot my question now. I'll think of it in a minute. We'll get back over this. But yeah, you know, with all this overwhelming, I had a different question for him. I get sidetracked, too many things in my brain right now. Okay, so to Shiva, back to him. Shiva discussed the duplicate ballots, many of which were approved erroneously. There were 2-copy, 3-copy, and 4-copy duplicate ballots in the mix. Well, that's interesting. Shiva found that there were ballots that had 2,580 scribbles for signatures and 1,919 with no signature at all. He then moved to signature analysis of the EVVs, that's early voter ballots. They had, 16,934 2-copy duplicates, 376 3-copy duplicates, and 12 4-copy duplicates. If you people are stupid enough to duplicate, you know, fraudulent votes, at least be smart enough not to do it 4 times, you idiots. And that's a 33,868 total images. Of total of 17,126 voters sent in 2 or more ballots as duplicates. Well, that's interesting. 17,126 duplicate ballots. You silly people. In many cases, blank signature duplicates came in, and one of the blank signature ballots was approved as a valid vote. Oh, there's your fraud. Others came in with the same address, same name, and phone number, but 2 different voter IDs. Oh, no flag there. Or early voter ballots, EVV return envelopes. Okay. Shiva emphasized the importance of the EVV's return envelopes and the signature verification element of the process. Hey, there's a big amount of fraud on the actual envelope. So the envelope is the ballot. Okay. So if you're at voting absentee, the envelope is your ballot box. That's where you're putting your vote. And if you remember in California, they had 2 holes in the back of the envelope. And depending on how you folded it and put it in, you know, most people would put it in a way that revealed your yes vote for recall, and those went through the post office. Gee, you got a problem with that? I do.
Just, I know. What's that? Yeah.
I mean, it's so obvious. It's scary. Yeah. All right, so we go on. Shiva, you know, emphasized the importance of EVB's return envelopes and the signature verification element of the process. I'm skipping a lot of stuff here. You have to read the article. Shiva concludes that the signature verification process used in the Maricopa County audit is unverifiable. Okay? Think about that. The signature verification process is unverifiable. They have no way to verify those absentee ballots, which means they'll have to be thrown out. Okay? So there's your fraud. That's just one aspect of this is multifaceted fraud. Dr. Shiva's team found, by the way, I've been in touch with Dr. Shiva, just to let you know, Gene, you may not even know this because this happened a little while ago. He knows about Action Radio. He knows that we write citizen legislation. And I think when this audit, he might be busy with the audit for a while, but he's very interested in what we do here because it is so new and different. So just to let you know, Dr. Shiva hopefully will be a future guest, but he's a cool dude. And so hopefully I'll be back in touch with him when things get a little easier on his end. Dr. Shiva's team found, back to the article, found a sudden surge in duplicate ballots between 11:04 and 11:09, 2020. Gee, now wasn't the election on the 3rd?
and they I think in Arizona they don't count ballots after that day, do they?
Well, apparently they did because they've got duplicate ballots from 11:04 2020 and 11:09 2020. So there's 5 days after the election where duplicates are coming in. Oh, my goodness. The article says there was no mention of duplicates in the Maricopa Canvas report. 17,126 voters sent in 2 or more ballots. Well, that's almost twice the margin of victory right there, folks. Joe Van Hutton said in a post-hearing analysis, that's a Pulitzer. They forgot the rest of his name. Joe Van Hutton. Hutton Pulitzer. I want him on the show too. This guy's a total geek. He's great. He says people were lurking in the system to understand the counts. At any moment in time, they could adjust. They took your legal ballots, fraudulent ballots and counterfeit ballots, and the legal ballots voted illegally. They jammed it into the system. You got that? Okay. The ballots are fraudulent. He's got an anomaly graph there and everything else. Let's get to Doug Logan. Doug Logan began his analysis around IPM, Eastern Standard Time. He reviewed the measures he and his team used to ensure that the audit was comprehensive and secure from top to bottom. Many of the counters were local volunteers performing their inspections to favor accuracy over speed, one of the reasons the audit took several months. The volunteers examined the paper at the granular level with microscopes to identify paper fibers, indicating the type of paper used. Over 140 terabytes of data for the paper examination alone. Now, I'm no computer expert, but I guarantee you 140 terabytes is one hell of a lot of information. Logan said that the current completed information included in the report includes hand counts, image capture, review and analysis of voter rolls. Not included today are the Splunk logs and data from the routers. I guess they're still trying to get the passwords out of Maricopa County, who's still stalling because they obviously, you know, want to cover up their guilt, right? I mean, it's going to be more obvious to me than this. They say, additionally, paper analysis needs to be completed. Kept saying record keeping for the audit was poor. Well, that seems to be a theme. He says there were more this is back to Logan, who's the cyber ninja guy. There were more duplicates than there were original ballots, and there were numerous concerns with the duplicate ballots in general. Missing or incorrect serial numbers, duplicate ballots commingled with originals. See, that's what they did too. They stuffed the fraudulent ballots in with the good ballots rather than keeping them separate. Like the remember the judge, I forgot where it was, Gene, there was a judge, I think Pennsylvania maybe, that ordered that, you remember that? That they could not, that the ballots in question could not be commingled with the original ones so they could tell which ones were the fraudulent ones. Well, of course, what the fraudulent elector officials did was they immediately mixed them in so you couldn't find them. Yeah, that's a crime. That's a jailable offense. Logan confirmed that the count alone still showed that Biden had the most votes. The count alone. Okay, so this is what they're reporting. They're reporting the count alone. Say, well, see, Biden won, the count alone. This would be a bumper jack comment. Bumper jack will say, see, the count alone showed that Biden won. Okay, that's not the issue. All right. Yes, we know the count showed that Biden won, but the count includes the fraudulent votes. That's why it doesn't matter.
Right, and fraudulent votes should not be counted.
Exactly. Those aren't votes. Well, I mean, there's a difference between a ballot and a vote. You know, and a ballot, anybody can send in a ballot, but it doesn't become a vote until it's official and proved legal. See, the nice thing about votes is that votes are not innocent until proven guilty. They're actually guilty until proven innocent. They're fraudulent until proven good. So you don't have to establish, you don't have to assume that all the ballots are good. You can assume they're all bad and make them prove that they're good, which is an interesting thing because ballots aren't people. So that's why we can do it that way. A proper canvas, back to the article, would be needed to reconcile the multiple irregularities that indicate the ballots counted do not reflect what actually happened in the election. Okay, so all you folks that think the count's important, let me just say that again. Multiple irregularities that indicate the ballots counted do not reflect what actually happened in the election. Logan also confirmed Shiva's findings that the EV2 files, I'm not sure what that is, did not match the EV32 files to the 33 files. I have no idea what that means. Meaning, oh, here we go. Meaning, thank you, the early voter ballots sent EV32s should match the early voter ballots received EV33. Okay, so that's what it is. That's where they're saying that, yeah, they apparently they received more ballots than were sent out. That's pretty interesting.
Exactly. How can you do that legally? Uh-huh.
Good question. All right. Before I get into Ben Cotton, I want to play a couple things real quick about Action Radio because we have fun here. This is what we do. Let me just get down here, way to the bottom, especially for our new listeners. We have so many new listeners. I want to tell you what we do. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.
Action Radio. part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
See all the fun we have here? I make all kinds. I'm going to make more of these, too. They're very, very, I think it's kind of cool, all our production stuff here. So, yes, I had the software. I actually went to school for that, to learn how to do radio production. And so I'm a fully trained producer, just not a fully trained talk show host. All right, back to the article. Ben, I should probably read this again. I never know when people are joining us here. Let me skip back to the top. Uncover DC, Maricopa County audit report, over 57,000 votes in question by Wendy Strzok Mahoney, September 24th. And this, of course, was right after the audit. So I've gone over a bunch of numbers. I've gone over a bunch of stuff. I've gone over a ton of things here. Where's Ben Cotton? Shiva. Doug Logan covered him too. We're actually covering a good amount of the stuff I wanted to cover. All right. Ben Cotton of Cipher, that's C, lowercase y, capital again, F-I-R, handled the cybersecurity aspects of the report. He was probably the most interesting. And I didn't hear Dr. Shiva. I'm going to listen to him. But Ben Cotton was unbelievable. He was brilliant. The article says his – You heard him? Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Saw him? Excellent, thank you. Yeah. He says, the article says his findings were significant. His team captured over 114 terabytes of information. Again, a hell of a lot of stuff, mostly in the form of images of the system. Cotton said there was, quote, no accountability in the security measures for the 2020 election. It only takes one person with administrative access to provide external voting access to that voting system. That's the internet, folks, okay? The system, quote, was neither accountable nor was it secure. Among the findings of the Cotton team was they found security patches had never been updated since August 6, 2019, okay, installation of the software. They failed to update antivirus definitions and failed to preserve security logs. No malware was found on the election management system, that's the EMS. Credential management portion of the investigation showed the county allowed shared accounts and common, more easily hackable passwords. I think the quote was, any kid hacker could have gotten into that system in about 10 minutes. That's from the audit report, from the actual presentation. Devices on the network were shown to have connected to the internet. Let me say that again for all of you that don't that haven't heard this and you're believing Dominion propaganda. All right, this is right from the audit itself. Devices on the network were shown to have connected to the internet. Contrary to what the county and Dominion maintained, some of the internet activity, quote, correlated with a purge of data on the day before the audit. Questions, kids? Anonymous logins that wiped out buffers. They also found someone had logged in as an administrator and deleted a lot of data. I think that person's on camera, too. They caught video. Oh, here we go. I should just read this stuff because it answers my questions. They caught on video whoever went in and did the file deletion. This is criminal and will be referred to Attorney General Brnovich. So in other words, they know. I'm sure the Arizona Senate knows. They're not going to release the name. And I don't care, as long as Brnovich is going to prosecute the...
I don't think they should release the name because it's none of our business. They just need to, you know what I mean? I think they just need to deal with it, take care of it.
Yeah, see, that's a really good point, though, because an accusation does not equal a conviction, and people are entitled
because
to the due process.
I really don't want anybody to get into trouble, however, mm-hmm. and throw it in their face, however... Voting in this country is a privilege and it's a right. And what they did and what Bumberjack continues to say is basically they're just blowing off the right of each legal citizen here to vote because all the illegal votes that went on, it's like it makes us who did vote legally throw all our votes away.
Exactly. Yeah. It disenfranchised. And that was the basis of the Texas lawsuit when they brought it to the Supreme Court and why the Supreme Court had to take that case, even though they didn't. But by the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, they absolutely had to take that case because Texas said the same thing, that all these fraudulent votes all over the country, you know, are disenfranchising Texas voters. And they're absolutely right in that. In fact, Texas, I think, refused to take Dominion machines. God knows they would have loved that account because Texas is huge. But they didn't get it. And the reason they didn't get it is because the voting machines were found to be fraudulent and able to be connected to the internet. That should have come out in the Supreme Court, too. Supreme Court's worried right now. I'll tell you right now. They're the, you know, John Roberts, you know, Mr. You know, nice hair, you know, pretty face on camera kind of thing. He's worried because he knows this is coming to the Supreme Court. And he has to find a way to satisfy his deep state operatives that, you know, have whatever they have on him to make him do stupid things like not take the Texas case, even though constitutionally he had to. And he knows he had to. So that's right. Going to be very interesting to see how Weasel Roberts, you know, handles this thing at the Supreme Court. Okay, here we go. Cotton said credential management in Maricopa County was offensive. He said again, credential management in Maricopa County was, quote, offensive, meaning the county showed little effort towards accountability of the account holders who had access to the systems. Well, see, you don't need access to the ballot box if you have access to the computers, you know, and the internet with the machines to count the ballots. Okay, this is why people are saying, the count came out the same. Well, so of course it came out the same, but that's not the issue. You know, if you're putting fraudulent ballots through a machine that's connected to the internet, you know, and that's how you're counting, of course they're going to come out the same.
Right.
This is, I will test, because they're going to make the ballots match the fraud, not the other way around. That's what happened after the election. So this is how I think this went. They realized that, of course, you know, Trump won. So this is when they stopped the count and started doing all the fraudulent stuff. They doctored the machines, but then they had to make the ballots match the count that they needed to make it look like Biden won. And that's when all these extra ballots and duplicates and all these other extra votes came in. But they made the margin so small, 10,700 and something. It's not that hard to fake 10,000 some odd votes. And even though they faked, well, it looks like they faked about 57,000. You know, they faked about six times as many votes as they needed to steal the election. That's interesting in itself, I think. All right. He says, Cotton says, I will tell you that in Maricopa County, they failed to provide or perform basic operating system and patch management functions. I'm not sure what those are. All major security vendors update their antivirus at least on a weekly basis. And the Maricopa County software had not been updated for security since, what, August 6th of 2019.
Right.
Okay, that's over a year. It's almost a year in August, September, October, November. So it's a year and 3 months before the election was the last time they updated their software. Well, a lot can happen in a year and 3 months. The article says he was not allowed to look at the poll worker laptops or any ISX devices. What do you mean you can't look at the poll worker laptops? What are poll workers doing with laptops? They're poll workers, you know. This is for handicapped people. He also stated his team was not allowed to see credentials that would help validate the configuration settings or the administrative settings. So the other thing is this audit's not over. There's still a lot left to do. You know, they've got a ton of things.
But the thing is, though, too, that if who are the people that were obstructing? I always get them mixed up. Those with what? That wouldn't turn over information.
Oh, Maricopa County. And most of those are Republicans. It's kind of ironic.
Yeah.
Well, here's
thing is, when the judge said they needed to turn that stuff over and they didn't turn it over, they should have all been stuck in jail and put in contempt of court because they didn't follow and do what they were supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Article says there were hardware configuration issues, meaning there were two hard drives on the adjudication endpoint. Not an approved configuration, a significant finding. I'm not sure what two hard drives is, but I'm wondering if you can transfer stuff from one to the other. If you have a fraudulent election on one hard drive, can you transfer it to the other hard drive that's used as the election counter? I don't know. But the fact they have two hard drives, I find interesting. They say the previous audits done by Maricopa County did not discover this dual drive configuration. We need a computer geek. Gee, we need to find a computer geek that knows what, you know, I know who to ask. I'm going to ask our webmaster. I'll send this to Eric. Say, Eric, can you comment on this? Explain to me what this is. Okay. Well, he actually has an explanation here. He says, this is a quote. He says, this means you can boot from a hard drive that is not part of the election configuration and have access to the election network. Oh, this is the ghost hard drive. All right, Eric, I'm not going to do it. In fact, let me take this second here to tell you about Eric Culley, who is our new webmaster, because he's also a sponsor of the show here. So let me do a quick plug for my new favorite person. And let me see if I find where I put my information. Here we go. Anyway, so if you need help with your small business marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You'll gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. So if you want to reach our new webmaster and someone who specializes in small business marketing, phone number 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. And if you miss it, it'll be on the podcast. Eric's email is eric@besmallbusiness.com. And his website is besmallbusiness.com. besmallbusiness.com. All right. Back to this here. He says, this means you can boot a hard drive that is not part of the election configuration and have access to an election network. Very important. It's clearly not part of the approved election configuration and allows access to the election network. Why do we have an election network? Aren't they supposed to be like individual voting machines that just count and humans do the recording? Apparently not. There's a network. All right. There is back to the article. There appeared to be a non-Maricopa accounting data, one of the bootable hard drives. What do you mean non-Maricopa accounting data? This is there were Dominion databases and data that appeared to have originated from, are you ready, Washington State and South Carolina. So not only do we have an extra hard drive, you know, we have non-Maricopa accounting data, and we have Dominion databases in Washington State and South Carolina. That alone should invalidate Maricopa County.
Right.
Okay, let's keep moving on here. We're actually getting most of this covered. I think we're going to be in good time. Cotton also said there were thousands of file deletions from the EMS, that's the election management system. Files were deleted in several time frames between the end of October and March of 2021. What were they doing at the end of October? The election hadn't even happened yet. That's interesting.
Getting prepared.
Why would they get prepared? So, that's fascinating. I think about that. So, in other words, they knew they were doing fraudulent stuff. They knew they were doing illegal stuff, and they wanted it actually erased before the election. Oh, that speaks volumes. Nice call. Thanks, Gene. Patrick Byrne, head of Overstock, previous head of Overstock.com, who's funding, I think, a lot of this audit. He says 100% of the paper is fake. Says Patrick Byrne in a post-hearing video conference attended by Patrick Byrne, Joe Flynn, Phil Waldron, Steve Montenegro, and other people. And Joe Van Hutten Pulitzer, he's the guy I want on the show. He says, this was confirmed by Joe Van Hutten Pulitzer in the same discussion broadcast on The America Project. I didn't get a chance to look at that, but I probably will. The American Project has helped foot the cost of the audit with the help of Patrick Byrne and donations from Americans. Byrne declared, the election should never have been certified. This is not about Trump or Biden. They deleted a great deal of data and tried to cover up election fraud. It is time for indictments and decertification.
Exactly.
That's a new word you're going to hear, decertification. The Biden electors get recalled. They get decertified. There are no Biden electors from Arizona. And we called this. We said this immediately after the election. As soon as we heard they were reporting Biden won, I said, wait a minute. Nah, that's fraud. That can't be. You know, and it wasn't long before we started talking about decertification. Well, here it is, folks. Okay, so yeah, and here's the Joe Van Hutten Pulitzer. He does paper and ink. He's one of these forensic guys that he does like micro. He's like. Remember the guy on CSA that Kevin Peterson played? Who was the head of CSI in the original series? Remember that guy? Follow the evidence.
I don't watch TV,
yeah.
So I'm
okay. All right. Well, for those of you that remember the original CSI. I think the actor's name was Kevin Peterson. He played the head, and I've forgotten his character name. But anyway, he said, follow the evidence. Well, Joe Van Hutten Pulitzer is like that guy from CSI. And the article says the paper issue was not covered with granularity during the hearing, but Byrne confirmed the finding regarding the paper stock used is in the full report. Okay, Pulitzer says that the proper security paper was not used. They weren't even using ballot paper. Okay.
Right.
The proper security paper for the ballots was not used, a significant issue if true. Vote secure stock paper should have been used to help avert fraud and bleed through of voter ballot markings. Do you remember the Sharpie issue?
Right, yeah.
Remember that? Okay, so for those who don't know the Sharpie issue, they confiscated the pens. They took all the pens that were supposed to be used on the ballot, and they brought in these Sharpies because Sharpies are felt ink and they bleed through. And since they knew they weren't using the proper paper, they knew they weren't using the proper pens, therefore they could invalidate those ballots because they showed through on the other side. I think if you marked it on one side for local elections, it showed up, you know, electing Biden on the other side or however they did it. And then they have to quote, adjudicate those ballots. In other words, they take them and judge them or they throw them out. And of course, they would do this in significantly Republican places. All right. That's just how this stuff works. They know who votes where. And that's all known. And I don't have a problem with that. But the problem is they did the Sharpie thing where they knew it was going to screw up the votes. Okay. The article says, notably, while the report was comprehensive with the information that was made available to the Senate and the auditors, a county-run canvas has not been performed, and the auditors have yet to see routers and Splunk logs. We talked about that earlier. Passwords and hardware keys because of resistance from the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors. See, they're not helping this at all. They're doing everything possible to delay, hoping to cross over that 22-month borderline where they don't have to report this stuff, where they don't have to follow this through anymore. It's like a statute of limitations. Folks, that's not going to happen. You know, I think there's too much pressure to get that done now. Okay, so that agreement has been reached and the findings are forthcoming. No deadline has been mentioned by FAN for the completion of that investigation. The routers could provide important data that will help paint a more accurate picture of what happened in the county's November 2020 election. See, they still don't really know. There's so much that's not known, but they do know it's fraud. Okay. Canvas. Yeah, I'm kind of getting kind of crazy about reading all this stuff. I might take a break for a minute here. In fact, I have to. One thing I realized about my 3-hour shows now, I need more water. I got to get a bigger cup. I got to get a refill. I'm going to have to bring my whole pitcher of water out of the fridge for the show because, I'm noticing little things about 2 hours because normally we'd only have about 15 minutes left at this point. So I'm trying to think of how much more I want to read from this. Gene, do you have anything? I'm going to put myself on hold for about a minute. Gene, you want to make some observations while I dash around and I'll be right back?
It's just so interesting to hear all the irregularities and everything that went on and how corrupt things were, and yet people are still saying, oh, but Biden still won. It's all conspiracy or whatever. But I think for people listening, I think we need to continue to demand the truth. We deserve the truth. I don't care how long it takes, but we deserve the truth. And the thing is, if everything else in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, if all that turns out to be false and, you know, we were all wrong based on things that we saw and heard, well, then fine. Let's say, okay, you're right. But the thing is, they don't even want it to be looked at. And so I'm glad Arizona took the bull by the horns and did the right thing and investigated. And unfortunately, because they got such lack of help for people that you would think wouldn't obstruct it, that it's still not over. And then what are they going to do about it? What are they going to do about it? Because what is Ducey going to do? And if Ducey doesn't do anything, and I don't know, Greg, who actually has the control now? Is it the as far as who can decertify? Because yeah, I was just saying, who there has the ability to decertify?
Arizona State Senate.
Okay.
In fact, that's one of the quotes I wanted to I want to break away from the election stuff. I think you guys can read the article. I think we've covered enough of that here. I really like to get this amount of information on the podcast so people have that as a resource so they can listen as they're driving because most people don't have the time to read all this stuff, and I understand that.
People that were overwhelmed and listen to mainstream media and what they were saying that, and not even mainstream media, I pretty much almost all the media saying that Biden won, get over it, and, you know, it's all conspiracy, whatever. Because it is not that at all. They showed major discrepancies, major issues, major concerns, and Biden, Biden, how can they say Biden won? We don't know.
Oh, I know. I know he didn't win. Think about that. Do you think Americans, let's go back to logic and reason again. If everybody knew that Biden was going to reverse everything that Trump did, most people know that what Trump did worked. Okay. We got lower energy prices. We got a great economy. We got millions of jobs. We got, we were punishing our enemies like Iran and China and North Korea with punishing sanctions. We know that NATO started to pay their fair share. We know that the border wall was going up. We knew that we were energy independent. And we knew we had the Keystone Pipeline. We had a bunch of other things. We knew that Trump got rid of tons of stupid regulations, and we knew that Biden reversed all of that. You know,
right.
As popular as Trump was, you know, before COVID, before he lost his way, you know, do you think that Americans really want higher gas prices, no energy, to pay for NATO, you know, long after World War II ended, to have bases in Okinawa, to keep the Afghanistan war going, to have China take over our economy, to have all our jobs move out so that rich corporate folks can produce, you know, goods in foreign countries for like pennies per day and sell them to Americans? You know, do you think that people actually would vote for that? No. You know, if you look at the policies of Biden reversing, and in fact, I had a page, my Facebook quotes are kind of, I think, amusing for this week. And so one of them, I said, I'm scrolling down through here, my stuff. Here's my Facebook quotes. Here we go. Biden proves every day that Trump was right on his policies by reversing all Trump policies with catastrophic results. And it's true. Everything that Biden reversed has gone straight to hell. You know, and the Trump's vindicated, because every time Biden says, I'm reversing this Trump policy, and guess what happens? It goes wrong. Now, you think that repeating the same thing and expecting a different result, the definition of insanity, would attract some attention out there in the media, but apparently they're all for it. So they either want this country destroyed or they're just complete idiots. And I never go with the complete idiot theory. I always believe that things are purposeful because there's smart people out there. Even if they're Marxists, they're still smart people. They're just enemies. And so if you notice that, Gene, everything gets reversed, you know. And do people notice that, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, I think what it is they just like to spin things the way they want to spin them to make themselves, just to get the narrative they want to.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I don't know what you wanted to talk about next, but I just want to talk to people.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I just want to make a comment about
sure.
Trump's the rally on Saturday night. And I wish people would talk to me in the chat about this. Wasn't that amazing to listen to someone that loves America and had America's best interest at heart? It was like, oh my God, it was phenomenal.
You know, it's interesting. I'm perfectly happy talking about Trump rally. In fact, we should spend a few minutes on that. You know, you look at the enthusiasm. You know, you look at the people behind Trump, and there was like four guys, all big, you know, big T-shirts that said Blacks for Trump. And they're cheering, and, you know, and then you have Herschel Walker, who's black. And, you know, and everybody kept saying, you know, the idea of calling Trump a racist is such a ridiculous thing because there's overwhelming evidence to the contrary. And he's not even pushing it. This is what he does naturally. He won an award from Jesse Jackson for advancing black Americans in New York back, what, 20 years ago. You know, and so this kind of stuff, he was the one that held the leadership conference for young black Americans, you know, and brought a bunch of people to the White House. He's the one, he's endorsed Herschel Walker. Now, I don't know if Biden endorsed any black candidates for office? I don't think so. I don't think, you know, other than Stacey Abrams, who's an avowed Marxist, but even, I don't even think she got a Biden endorsement. Did anybody get a Biden endorsement?
The thing is, I would think though, if Biden would endorse someone, that's a sure way of losing.
Oh, well, that's a good point. I didn't think of that. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So nobody wants a Biden endorsement. That's kind of funny. Yeah. Yeah, we should talk about the Trump rally. Now, of course, you know, anytime you want to bring up a topic, you're like, you know, co-host as much as producer. So feel free to bring up something. If there's something I really want to, you know, make sure I cover, I'll just kind of finish whatever's going on. But the Trump rally. Yeah, go ahead.
I just got one more comment about Bumper Jack. Mm-hmm. He says that the problem with your sources are they're all biased articles because you think they're the truth. And I'm just responding that's they're articles that mainstream media don't want you to know. The mainstream media are the one that are not telling the truth.
Now, this is interesting. This is what I talk about when people say, well, you're just a conspiracy theorist. You know, Sonny Borelli was quoted on American News with Christina Bob saying, this is no longer a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy. It's a proven conspiracy with massive evidence as a result of this forensic audit and the thousands of affidavits and the gazillion hours of videotape and the testimony and everything else has been presented. Okay, this is no, and the media cover-up. This is no longer a conspiracy theory, not that it ever was. you know. And even if it is a theory, that's okay. That's how science works, okay? So it's kind of funny with science. People talk about, you know, well, if you're a conspiracy theory, that's a meaningless thing. It means you're a paranoid, weirdo, wacko, okay? But you look in science. Science comes up with hypotheses. They test their hypotheses, and they get enough hypotheses that seem to make sense. They form a theory. Then they test the theory. So there's nothing wrong with the theory. Theories are normal, okay? But this isn't a theory anymore. Now it's an actual conspiracy, which means two or more people conspired to do something illegal. That's what a conspiracy is. Well, we've got millions of people across the country in this conspiracy. You've got media. You've got election officials. You've got party officials. You've got all kinds of different sources of things. And you've got you've got the justice. You've got government officials. You know, you've got the Justice Department arresting people, you know, for nothing, for being in the Capitol building January 6th. So you got all these horrendous things going on. And yet there's still, you know, the Congress of conspiracy theory. I'm sorry, it just doesn't work that way anymore. So the idea, so Bumperjack says the problem with Greg's sources are that they are biased articles he thinks are the truth. Well, you know, and this is a standard leftist tactic. So they say that all your sources are biased, all our sources are good. Well, that can't be. You know, and so I think I'm challenging their sources. I'm challenging their sources on the evidence. Okay. So if Bumperjack wants to respond with the reports of the Cyber Ninjas or Ben Cotton and his cipher, or from the folks that the counted, from the, you know, any of the folks that or Dr. Shiva, you know, with all his report, he wants to respond to those. You know, you can disagree. You don't have to take those as face value. But apparently the Arizona Senate does. Okay, the Arizona Senate Republicans do, because they're calling for decertification.
Right, but also what he's saying and what you were reading, hello, Greg, but
I'm here.
You were reading what they actually said.
Yes.
What they actually found. So it's like he has no merit to say that your articles are biased. No, they're not. They were telling what the ninjas found. And so, sorry if you don't want to hear it.
I mean, I quoted exactly from the PowerPoint, from the presentations that were given, and I quoted the actual people themselves.
Right.
And I quoted the person that wrote the article.
But mainstream media, you cannot say they did that. No.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
Nowhere did they talk about any of what you brought up.
Well, and of course, and Bumperjack's at a disadvantage too. So we have to be fair, because I could not post this on Facebook. So social media is not allowing the truth. So to say these articles are biased, that's what the sources are saying. They don't want you to read the information we have, the information that was presented. But Bumperjack is free to go to YouTube or Rumble, probably Rumble. I'm not sure where they are. But watch the videotapes. Read the presentations. You can look them up online. I mean, I'll give you a website. Bumperjack, I'm going to give you a website right now. So you want to go to www.azsenaterepublicans.com/audit. And you have the entire election audit documents, including the letter from President Fan. You've got the Cyber News report, the Echo Mail report, that's Dr. Shiva, the Cypher report, Randy Pullen, and Ken Bennett. So Echo Mail, I didn't go into a lot of Dr. Shiva stuff because I think I covered enough. The Echo Mail report is the one on the ballot envelopes. That's the signature verification. Okay, so let me just do this one more here we go. They talk about a canvas here. You should listen to this as well. This is back to the original article, Uncover DC. A canvas was originally requested by the Senate Republicans and proposed in the original contract, but significant pushback from the federal government, the Democrats, and the Secretary of State Hobbs, that's in Arizona, forced Senate President Fan and the Republicans to back off from doing a canvas. Okay. Canvas is when you go out and say, did you vote? You know, you've got 15 people from this address voting. Do you know who these people are? And of course, the person will say, no, I don't know who these people are. I'm the one that lives here. You know, these are the things that happen. So this is why they want to do a canvas. Article says a letter in May from Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General Pamela Carlin claimed, quote, potential intimidation of voters if a canvas were to be performed. A citizen-run canvas led by Liz Harris and over 1,000 volunteers, okay, who went door-to-door, found, are you ready for this? Here's a big number, 173,104 lost votes, okay? So where are they? Remember, the vote margin of victory.
I wonder who they voted for.
Yeah, exactly. Who do you think those people voted for? Yeah, Trump. Probably.
Exactly.
Here's the other one, and 96,389 ghost votes. And who do you think the ghost people voted for? I don't know, Biden? So there you go. So the canvas, they couldn't do the official canvas, but these people did a canvas anyway. And that's Liz Harris. You see her on One American News all the time, too. In fact, she had a tweet way back up here. Now I'll find it later. There's too much cool information going here. There's one more thing I wanted to get to as well. Okay. So Uncover DC reported in July, okay, there were 74,243 ballots received and sent out with no records attached. 11,326 people didn't show up in election files on November 7, but suddenly appeared on December 4, and it was recorded that they had voted in the 2020 election. 3,981 voters were registered after October 15th who voted. It was decided in court that voters registered after that date would not be able to vote. 18,000 voters who voted were shown to have been removed right before the election. Documentation is needed on those voters, and canvassing would help, according to Logan. Okay, you got an executive summary. We got more. I might finish this up tomorrow because this is so good, so comprehensive. But I got a couple of quick tweets and quotes for you here. It looks like actually Dr. Price, so I'm going to get to him in just a second here. Yeah, you get Doug Ducey quotes. Well, I saved these. But there's more of this article. I can pick it up tomorrow. We are not done with this audit. It's going to be fascinating. I'll talk to Dr. Price, see if he's had a chance to catch the videos or whatever. We have a totally different topic. In fact, the nice about having Dr. Price on Mondays is that we do have different topics. Gene, do you have any closing thoughts before I bring on Dr. Price?
No, just except for people. Keep the faith.
Oh, we're not done.
Keep the faith. No, not
even
by
close
long
to
shot.
Done. No, this is the first domino, and it hasn't completely fallen yet, but it's on its way down. All right, let's get to national security. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Yes, I want to introduce Dr. Pry to one of our new sound effects here because we have live chat. And people are one person is really kind of taking over the live chat. But Dr. Pry, if you hear this tone, that means we have a live chat. And then Gene wants to kind of break in and get us a question that's one of the folks that's texting in has for us, as well as just the regular callers. We'll take them too. Dr. Pry, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm as well as can be expected, I suppose, under the circumstances of our nation being never more threatened from without and from within than it has been in its history. I'm alive, so I guess I'm good.
Yeah,
hopefully that situation will continue for all of us.
Yeah, we've spent 2 hours going over, because we're now a three-hour show, going over the inside of the dangers, and with a pretty extensive review of the Arizona audit. And so I'm kind of talked out on that. We covered a lot of ground. So let's go to the exterior threats, the ones that people are not talking about in the news as much. And this is why I like having you on, so you can tell us the latest danger, that we need to be dealing with that we're not. What's going on?
Well, fortunately, the Pentagon is finally starting to do its job, or at least some in the Pentagon, like Admiral Charles Richard, who heads STRATCOM. He's our top officer on our nuclear deterrent. And people like him and the commander of NORAD, almost everybody except General Miley, have been participating in a series of conferences that were started, I think, in August and are continuing today, where they are briefing people about the growing nuclear threats from Russia and China and how dire these threats are. Admiral Richards, for example, described the Chinese buildup of its nuclear threat as breathtaking. Biden's own Secretary of the Air Force said that China is developing a first strike capability against the United States, which is, wow, what a change from the idea that China is supposed to have a no first use policy and a minimum deterrence posture, which is what the left and most people, you know, who are around Biden, you know, have been arguing, well, basically up until now. The I published an article on this, which I provided to you, published by the Center for Security
Policy. Oh, yeah,
post it right
away. Yeah, it's a great article.
Where people can get the
details
and quotes from some of these astonishing quotes from the Pentagon finally coming out of the closet on a lot of this stuff. And, and in effect, these are the reason they're doing this in public is obviously to educate the public and appeal to the public, although I don't know if their appeals because of the nature of the liberal left-wing mainstream media, you know, are getting outside the beltway very much. I doubt that they are. You know, I haven't seen New York Times headlines, for example, quoting the STRATCOM commander on this. The reason for this is because I think the Pentagon is panicked. We've talked about on your show before about how the Biden administration has, is waiting for a nuclear posture review. They've decided they're going to do another nuclear posture review that's due in January. You know, these nuclear posture reviews are not done, you know, every year, and they're not done by every administration. There are, I think, been only five nuclear posture reviews in the course, you know, of the whole, ever since we got nuclear weapons. And the point of the nuclear posture review is to basically describe, well, these are the nuclear threats. This is how we plan to deal with them. And they are used as the basis for our nuclear strength. You know, how many nuclear weapons are we going to have? What are the delivery systems going to be like? You know, and tactical nuclear weapons, you know, and the like. It basically serves as a foundation for making those policy decisions. And what I think the Pentagon is afraid of, or at least those who still care about the existence of this country and are doing their jobs, guys like Admiral Richard, you know, who's by telling the truth is being very politically incorrect, you know, about the nature of the nuclear threats, is you know, is that there are so many anti-nuclear activists, as we have also talked about, who have been promoted to responsible positions within the Biden administration and who surround the president and who are in the Congress. You know, people like Representative Adam Smith, who's the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, which makes him, after the president, you know, one of the most powerful people in the country, determined who will decide the future of our military capabilities, including our nuclear deterrent. And Adam Smith has been one of these anti-nuclear activists who wants to do the most radical things that the left has been after, you know, for many decades, you know, to drastically downsize our nuclear deterrent. He wants to get rid of our, as I explained in my article, to get rid of our triad of ICBMs and bombers and ballistic missile submarines so that we have no more ICBMs, no more nuclear bombers, and just what's called a monad of ballistic missile submarines. Monad?
What does that stand for?
It means, you know, the triad, you know, is three legs to the nuclear deterrence stool or capabilities. A dyad would be two, and a monad is a single, that you can rely on the single, and that the monad is envisioned. He actually held hearings about this a couple of years ago and has continued to express support for it, is cutting in half the number of ballistic missile submarines we plan to build. You know, the Ohios will be replaced eventually in the 2030s with a new class of ballistic missile submarine called the Columbia, necessary because the Ohios are at the end of their service life, okay? But instead of building 12 to replace the Ohios, he wants to build 6, and that would enable us to have on patrol only 2 ballistic missile submarines on a day-to-day basis. So all of our deterrence capability, our ability to protect and to dissuade the adversary from using their nuclear weapons against America's homeland, and our retaliatory capabilities under surprise attack conditions would come down to those 2 ballistic missile submarines at sea. And this is terrifying to the Pentagon. I mean, this is something that could really happen. And I predicted on your show and in articles that I've been writing that the reason Biden has asked for a nuclear posture review is possibly, you know, to provide himself with political cover so that he can do what the Democrat Party base wants, what the anti-nuclear activists in the Democrat Party political base want, which is to do this, what I just described. And the nuclear posture review, which will be written, people who are, obviously the Pentagon will write it too, but it's going to be written in coordination, you know, with mm-hmm. the White House national security advisors, these new people that Biden has brought in, like Jill Ruby, for example, who is our new director of the National Nuclear Security Administration. They actually maintain our nuclear warheads. And she has stepped out of a group called the Nuclear Threat Initiative, or NTI, which is one of these radical activist anti-nuclear groups, right into that position. So that's one of the most important personalities,
mm-hmm.
one of the most important officials in terms of what is our nuclear deterrent going to look
well,
like.
That's the story, though, the Biden administration. I can't even say Biden administration. I can never say President Biden. I can never say Biden administration. It just doesn't get out of my brain. But they're famous for taking people, you know, college professors with no experience. I don't know where Blinken, you know, Secretary of State was basically Biden's aide for 20 years. So obviously he'll do his bidding.
Right.
You know, so you've got people, and you know these people because you're in Washington. You've watched them for years and years. That the people that are in office now that are giving these positions of massive importance have no practical experience. They're radical groups. It'd be like what would be a good place to I'm trying to think of something. Putting the head of Black Lives Matter at the head of the Equal Employment Opportunity. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Commission.
Well, in effect,
they might actually do it.
I don't know her name, but they in effect, you know, they're I think it was
I hate it when
Carlson.
I'm right. Okay.
There is a woman of color who's in charge of the civil rights division in the Department of Justice when it comes to vote for voting, who is herself a racist. She's an anti-white racist and is and subscribes to all the radical views of Black Lives Matter. So, you know, you're not exaggerating. That has actually literally happened in terms of the Department of Justice.
Wow.
I'm equally concerned with people. Yeah. And the kind of people that they have that are holdovers from the Obama years, for example,
including
there are people who have had long service in the government who have been failed us in terms of our national security. For example, on the North Korea desk, what's her name? I'm getting so senile. There's a Wendy Sherman. Wendy Sherman. Okay,
I've heard that. You mentioned her before. Yeah.
Yeah, right. You know, she's been in the State Department. Every time a Democrat administration comes in, you know, Wendy Sherman comes back. And she's one of the people who has spearheaded for the Democrats our efforts to denuclearize North Korea. Okay, you know? And in fact, Wendy Sherman, when I was on the House Armed Services Committee, was one of the people, you know, mm-hmm. who gave us Bill Clinton's greed framework, you know, which basically guaranteed that North Korea would become, you know, a nuclear weapon state. You know,
oh, yeah.
Remember
the right Adams, not the Adams for Peace, but they had some program. They were going to give them nuclear power plants, you know, in exchange for not, you know, creating
yes, exactly.
nuclear weapons.
They elicited,
and they,
right, when yeah. Clinton first came into office, Jim Woolsey, who had been the director of CIA, one of the best directors of CIA we ever had, I would add, but he was Clinton's director of CIA, and Woolsey was a Democrat at that time, and serving the Clinton administration. And he basically said it in public because it was so important in testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, mm-hmm. you know, this was 1995, I think, that North Korea not only was could become, and was likely to become a nuclear weapon state, but that had probably built a couple of atomic bombs at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that began the crisis. And Clinton didn't want to have any international crises. He wanted to be able to cut the defense budget and plow the defense budget money into expanding social programs.
Peace
so we wanted the North Korean crisis to go away. But there was a consensus among everybody, among the old line, the blue dog Democrats, the Democrats, you know, who came out of the Harry Truman tradition, you know, the left didn't have the kind of dominance in the Democrat Party then that it does today. Okay. So you did have a minority of leftists that were basically around Bill Clinton. He's the one that started the process of bringing them in. And for a while and the White House was having regular meetings that I participated in with Armed Services Committee to keep us apprised, because they thought that they might have to launch a preemptive strike on North Korea to stop them from getting the bomb, because there was a consensus among Republicans and Democrats that it was just too dangerous to let North Korea cross that threshold and get nuclear weapons. And the crisis lasted about 6 months, and then about a guy named Gary Seymour, who worked for Wendy Sherman in the State Department, came back with this peace for our time message to us, said, oh, the crisis is over. You know,
Neville Chamberlain.
We're going to negotiate an agreed framework. North Korea has agreed in principle to this agreed framework thing. And in exchange for us giving them food and oil and money and building, I think it was 20 nuclear reactors. They would build 20 new nuclear reactors, you know, because the North Koreans were saying they were building nuclear reactors not for making nuclear weapons, but because they needed electricity. Okay. And
well, I'm sure they do, but they also make nuclear weapons from nuclear power plant material, right? Isn't that how it works?
Well, yes, absolutely. And the Yongbyon reactor has no other purpose except to make, you know, plutonium and uranium for, you know, for their nuclear bomb program. And that was another myth that the Clintonistas tried to sell us through the agreed framework, that these were going to be safe nuclear reactors that they couldn't use for making the bomb.
Oh.
That was not true. There's no such thing as a safe nuclear reactor.
Yeah.
And, you know, my old boss from the EMP Commission actually came in to testify, you know, that, look, you know, if you give them these nuclear reactors, it's actually going to increase by 10 or 20 fold their ability to make it. But that didn't stop the Clintons. They all they cared about was the cosmetics of it, you know, not the real nuclear threat. And so they said they were confident the agreed framework was going to work. And so for the 8 years, because this was the first crisis they encountered when Clinton first came into office, for 8 years, you know, they maintained the fiction of the, you know, agreed framework. And we knew that the North Koreans were cheating on it all the time, but that's making a long story, and we don't have much time. But the bottom line is...
Yes, we do. We got the rest of the show.
That bright idea came from Wendy Sherman, and she's back. She gave us a nuclear North Korea, which is, you know, a real one of the worst failures for person and national security that you can imagine. And yet it has never hurt her, you know, just like 9/11 never hurt nobody ever got fired from that. You'd think that Wendy Sherman would be cast into the outer darkness and would be running a hot dog stand someplace, you know, but no, she's back.
She probably got a promotion. Here's a question though. It seems very, well, maybe it seems logical in a way, but it seems strange that the people that are screaming the most for arms control and against nuclear proliferation are guaranteeing it, because it's the Democrats that gave you know, North Korea the technology, as you said, in the Clinton administration. It was Obama, Democrat, that basically made it possible for Iran to get a nuclear bomb. I'm not sure the history of India or Pakistan, but I can pretty well guess that there were Democrats involved, and the Rosenbergs, you know, with stealing our nuclear secrets and giving them to the Russians. I'm sure we're leftists, ultra-leftists. Otherwise, why would you do that? So the left has a long history of doing, again, projecting, of doing the very things that they accuse others of doing and lying about what they actually want. Because if they actually wanted to limit nuclear proliferation, they wouldn't be giving everybody else, giving our enemies especially, all this nuclear technology.
Well,
what do you think?
I have to defend the Democrats here where Iran and North Korea are concerned. You know, because the Yongbyon reactor, for example, they didn't get that technology from us. You know, that came from the Russians. Russia and China have been the chief sponsors of, and that's something the State Department, regardless of the administration, hasn't been able to get through its thick head. Russia and China want North Korea to be a nuclear weapon state. There are Russian scientists who are missile and nuclear weapons experts that help the North Koreans actually working in North Korea. The missile designs are basically largely derived from the Russians. China has helped with sophisticated things like the transporter erector launchers and the solid fuel ICBMs that North Korea has. I mean, and that should be obvious to anyone because, North Korea has gone, that can't even feed its own people. It's just amazing how quickly that they have been able to develop highly advanced nuclear weapons and intercontinental ballistic missiles. Yeah. They could never have done that on their own, given their technological base. Not even the United States has got a mobile ICBM. North Korea's got mobile. There are only three countries in the world that have got mobile ICBMs, which is probably the most technologically advanced and sophisticated kind of nuclear weapon you can have. And that's
Russia. We got a great picture on your article.
The mobile ICBM. China. In North Korea, we don't have a mobile ICBM. France doesn't have a mobile ICBM.
Oh,
Britain doesn't have one, but North Korea's got one. Who did they get that from? Well, they got it from from the Chinese and the Russians. As for Iran, Iran's nuclear program, is also mostly from the Russians. All their nuclear reactors, the Bushehr nuclear reactor, was built for them by Russia. Russia's contracted to build more nuclear reactors for them. We know there have been Russian nuclear experts that have worked with the Iranians. This idea that you can have a peaceful nuclear reactor, this is really just nonsense. Because once you know the fuel cycle, getting the plutonium and the uranium to weapons grade, that's the hardest part of getting an atomic bomb. And if you understand the fuel cycle for a nuclear reactor, you basically know how to do that. And it becomes a question of whether you're going to be good and not and resist the temptation to do that. Okay, and Iran is not good. They obviously don't need nuclear reactors for electricity. They're a very oil rich country, So this whole business that maybe the Iranians don't want the bomb. Which is what the left argues. They make much about. Oh, there was a fatwa issued by Khomeini many years ago about how Iran, rejects nuclear weapons, right? And you may recall President Obama leaned on that very heavily to justify his joint comprehensive plan of action, the Iran nuclear deal, that gave them billions of dollars and stuff.
Our money and Russia and China's technology. It seems to be the combination.
Yes, that's right, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And, they know that they can use. I've been predicting for a long time that if the Russians and Chinese are successful, and so far they have been amazingly successful, not only in nuclearizing North Korea, but using North Korea as a surrogate to advance their geostrategic goals in the Pacific.
It's like a test.
If they win in the Pacific chessboard, with using North Korea, as a major piece to get there, that same thing is going to happen with Iran in the Middle East and Europe. And, and we've talked about some of the things that where they have won on the Pacific chessboard, like evacuating our B-52 bomber wing from Guam so that it's not in range of North Korean missiles anymore, bringing it back to North Dakota. The Air Force can talk all at once and say, this is better. To bring the B-52 wing back to North Dakota. It gives us more flexibility, but in terms of our credibility,
honestly,
that really hurts us to take the American nuclear cop out of the neighborhood and go back to North Dakota.
B-52s? B-52s are old. They're slow. They're big. They have 8 engines. They're not very fuel efficient, or they contribute to the global warming carbon footprint. I'm just being silly here.
But they're nuclear capable. And Taiwan and South Korea and Japan have no nuclear capability. And so they were a physical representation of the U.S. nuclear umbrella in their neighborhood,
Like a good umbrella, they're big enough. Yeah. Yeah. I want to direct people to your article because we have a lot of folks that, you know, I post on my Facebook page, but the show's growing fast enough that I really want to start quoting your actual article. So anybody wants to go to the Center for Security Policy. The title of Dr. Pryor's article, Losing America's Future to the New Nuclear Superpowers. And he did this September 24th, the same day that the audit came out. So that was a busy Friday. Talk about a news release. And the cover picture is one of these ICBM, mobile ICBMs. It's got an amazing truck. And the fact that it's painted in camouflage colors, you know, if you're putting in a missile in a silo, you don't have to camouflage it. It's in a silo, okay? But the fact that this thing is camouflaged in green and brown and all these different colors, like a forest, for example, you know, means that this is definitely a mobile ICBM, and the truck below it is pretty incredible. And that's the one you're talking about, the mobile launcher, right? So they drive this truck around and put it wherever they want, and then they stand the missile up and off it goes kind of thing. Is that how it's designed to work?
Yeah, that's right. It's called a transporter erector launcher because not only is it powerful enough to move an ICBM, which weighs, you know, many tons.
Oh, but, yeah, I can see it. It's huge.
But
yeah.
It can erect it into the launch position. Okay. And more important than that, it's got the command and control assets in the cab so you can launch that missile. So this is like having a
self-contained
Cape Canaveral that rolls around to wherever you want, because you've got to know in order to maximize the missile accuracy, for example, you know, you have to have a GPS system in the truck that lets you know exactly where that missile, you know, where the center point of that missile is when you raise it up, you know, in terms of where it's being launched from, and all of the things that you need in order to have an accurate ballistic missile launch that's going to travel, you know, across the Pacific Ocean, for example, and hit us. You need all of that in the cab of the truck. So it's like,
do they have launch codes? Do they have launch codes and security? I mean,
it certainly has the capability. We don't know how the North Korean command and control system works. You know, we don't know if they're presumably, you know, there are some kind of launch codes that are there. But we don't know if they're held within the cab of the truck so they can launch independently, or whether Kim Jong-un has got them, or who's got them, you know.
Some idiot driving one of these things decides to let it go? I mean, come on. I mean, and that sounds ridiculous, but it's not that ridiculous. Unless they have real command, unless it cannot be launched with counter signals, electronic, you know, there's got to be some kind. Well, how would you do this? If you wanted to design a truck that was independent enough to launch a nuclear missile with a multiple, you know, MIRV with independent nuclear warheads on it, and it's independent, it can stand the missile up, it can fire it, it can do the GPS coordinates. What kind of computer security program is it? Is it a signal? Is it an internet link? How would you do it to ensure that, you know, the truck driver can't launch it without the express permission of Kim Jong-un, you know, doing
well,
himself? How would you do that?
We don't, Greg, though, under a worst-case scenario, we don't know that he can't do that. You know, you know, they could, and we had our posture back in the early Cold War. You know, it used to be that our ballistic missile submarine commanders had everything they needed on the submarine. And if they had wanted to, they could independently launch their whole submarine load of missiles. You know, and that was because we were concerned about a scenario where our political and military leaders were killed in a surprise attack from the Soviet Union. And so to deter that, you know, we had a situation where we had our ballistic missile submarines on patrol, so they could independently launch and do everything they needed to do. And they had all the codes there so that some sailor couldn't do it. The captain had to do it, okay? You might want to watch a movie called, what was that called?
Hunt for Red October?
The administration. I think it did have red in the title. It had Gene Hackman in it. And he was a ballistic missile submarine commander. And I think Washington was in it.
So yeah, that's the other sub film everybody watches.
Crimson Tide. I think
Crimson Tide. There
Tide.
We go. Yeah, okay, I haven't seen that as many times.
I
like Sean Connery.
And they portrayed, and right up until that period when that movie was made, the ballistic missile submarines did have that independent launch capability. That's one of the things the Clinton administration changed. Part, you know, because the anti-nuclear people who were within the Clinton administration always hated that idea. They were more concerned about accidental nuclear war than they were about the credibility of the U.S. nuclear deterrent.
Not a purposeful one.
So anything they could do to hamstring our nuclear deterrent, they did. And that was one of the things. So that now, you know, our ballistic missile submarine commanders can't independently launch. They do have to get a, you know, launch codes, emergency action messages from Washington. And the same.
Well, see, that's a good thing, though.
Their commanders could also independently launch. So it could be that we don't know, but it could be that the North Koreans have a situation similar, you know, arrangement similar to what we had during the early Cold War, where their guy has codes, you know, the captain, let's say, who's in charge of that truck, you know, has codes, but has verbal instructions that, you know, if you lose a signal in your cab from North Korea, you know, that indicates that the Pyongyang has been nuked, you know, then you go and launch this thing, you know, and don't, you know, because they may be concerned that we could, just by taking out Pyongyang and killing Kim Jong-un and their top military political leaders, that we could win the nuclear war that way and, you know, have no problem neutralizing their nuclear deterrent. So there certainly must be a school of thought within North Korea where people would argue for a situation like that, what we did, except with their mobile systems. You could go to the other extreme and say, you know, that no, you need to get codes from Kim Jong-un himself, you know, that only he can authorize the execution of these forces. And it could be set up that way, too. We just don't know. But in the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the way to think of these transporter erector launchers is that they are an amazing piece of technology. Like I said, they're like Cape Canaveral on wheels, you know, because there's a lot of complex things you have to do to launch a ballistic missile, including targeting. You know, you don't, you know, it depends on which scenario, what kind of scenario is happening. Are you going to shoot at a city? Is it going to be a missile silo, a bomber base? You know, it's hard to anticipate those things in advance. So you may have to change the coordinates of your target in the guidance system, the warhead, and that can be done from the cab of the truck.
Basically, it's like dialing up a GPS, like a GPS destination. You just kind of plug in the you just plug in the requested place, and it looks up the coordinates, and off it goes. This is ridiculous. This is scary. You know, here's the thing too.
It's got all the capabilities that we have in our ICBM launch control facilities. You know, in these underground bunkers that can control the every 10 Minuteman missiles.
Right.
Has one launch control facility, you know, that can control and launch those missiles. Well, they've got that same thing inside the cab of that transporter erector launcher for the North Korean missiles.
You know, it looks like there's two sides. You got the missile splitting the truck. I'm wondering if there are actually two cabs or whether they do like the dual missile lock that we have. You know, you see, I forgot in the film, War Games. You know, where they actually show the beginning where the people in the bunkers, the silos, they actually have to, and they're far enough apart that one person can't obviously reach it, but they have to turn the keys simultaneously. They're like 10 feet apart. You know, I mean, these cabs, the picture is interesting.
Yeah, we just don't know. We don't know what they're, I mean, that's one of the scary things,
But this is what our CIA is for, though. You know, there can't be that many nuclear missile truck drivers in North Korea. I mean, how hard would it be to find out who these people are and do a little background on them? I mean, isn't that why we have a CIA? Isn't that their job?
It's very hard to find out. They're a black box to us, you know. Very hard to find out. It's not like we
facial recognition, satellite pictures, you know. It's a little enhancement. We can find out who they are. We should.
No,
we can find out who Americans are. That's too bad.
You know, let me put it this way. Maybe we can, but it would be a black program. And it's not as easy as you think. You know, the satellites aren't good enough to be able
to be
recognize
easy.
Somebody's face or read a license plate from outer space, for example, which is one of the common myths that's out there in our newspapers. A person's inside the cab of a truck, you know.
You can't see them.
You know, we don't know where they live or who these people are. You know, we would you'd have to have an agent within North Korea, you know, which is a totalitarian system, very, very hard. You know, to penetrate.
Well, how'd that picture
very,
get
very
out
hard
then?
To penetrate.
Who took that picture of that?
It was probably one of the pictures that has been put out by North Korean press to the whole world. They periodically have military parades that they broadcast to the whole world as part of their deterrence policy.
Interesting.
And you can visit Pyongyang. I mean, you can go there. Remember that college student that was, they arrested him for taking a North Korean flag as a souvenir.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And, he ended up dying from the experience.
Yeah,
you know,
they brought him back right before
like
he died.
Tourist-friendly. Yeah. That's what it's like in Pyongyang, which is the only place tourists can go, you know, unless it's on a special tour. In order for us to get a spy into North Korea, you couldn't fly him in by airplane. I mean, you'd have to drop somebody off by submarine. And, you know, they know. I mean, you can't travel around. It's not like it's a free place. You know, so just fiction. Let's say we're going to have Greg Penglis. So go and be our North Korean
spy. I'm a white guy. You think I wouldn't stand up in North Korea?
And teach North Korean, okay?
I'd be the worst
so
one
that
to say.
Speak Korean like an expert. Yeah. Just doing that, okay? Finding somebody who speaks the dialect and all of that.
South Koreans.
Exactly.
We get a South Korean to do it.
They would know. It would be very hard to blend in. They know everybody in every village who's supposed to be there, who isn't, But anyway, that's another neither here nor there. And it's not as important as I think the other issues that I'm arguing in my article, which is, I wonder, I mean, the point of my article is, I wonder if we've already passed the tipping point here, in terms of the modernization of our own nuclear deterrent. The best outcome that we can hope for from the nuclear posture review that's coming up in January, the best outcome is to continue on the same course that we're following now, which in my view is grossly inadequate to maintain our nuclear deterrent. What we're doing is, in effect, it's unfolding very slowly because our system isn't efficient anymore. It used to be, for example, under John F. Kennedy, we were able to build our 1,000 Minuteman ICBMs in a few years and field that force as a deterrent because we knew we were in a wet race with the Russians. Kennedy was elected on the idea that there was a missile gap and an ICBM gap between us and a lot of people criticized him for exaggerating that. Even if it weren't true at the time, it was good that Kennedy thought so, because by the time the Cuban Missile Crisis came around, he had a 5-to-1 advantage in ICBMs, and that's what enabled him to avoid a nuclear war, to win the Cuban Missile Crisis peacefully. So it's a good thing when the U.S. has superiority, something that's been forgotten. It's a good thing when the U.S. has superiority in everything or anything, but especially in nuclear missiles. And that's been one of the great self-destructive policies that we have followed from arms control, where we convinced ourselves that, oh, no, parity, U.S. superiority is bad and destabilizing. We have to have parity, equality, so that our adversaries don't feel threatened by us. That was the theory of arms control all through the Cold War. And
parity guarantees
more,
though.
That we cling to today. They have always strived for superiority and for a war-fighting, war-winning capability over us. And now they've got it, And it's going to take us, with our current system, it's going to – we won't have new modern systems coming online until after the year 2030. Most of the modernization is going to happen in that decade. And even then, they're not going to be modern nuclear weapons, just modern platforms and delivery systems, a new bomber, a new ICBM called the Ground-Based Strategic Deterrent, the new Columbia-class submarines that I mentioned before. But the warheads will be the same design warheads, in many cases the same old warheads that Ronald Reagan built. And the Chinese and Russians have gone gangbusters. Even the North Koreans will have modern warheads based on advanced technologies because they've also been cheating on the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. For 30 years, they've got basically a 30-year head start on us on building advanced high-tech nuclear weapons. And they've got those today, right now, today. Their forces are modern today. And so that's the best outcome we can hope for the nuclear posture review, that we'll in my view, because I don't think the Biden administration and the people that are surrounding him are going to be awakened the way the Pentagon is to the threat. And the best they can hope for is that we're going to continue plodding along toward 2030 or afterwards. What the Pentagon's trying to avoid is the worst outcome, and this is what I fear, is the scaling back of our nuclear deterrent. You know, giving up on the nuclear arms race, giving up on the U.S. nuclear deterrent, and embracing the views that the anti-nuclear crowd has, which is, oh, you don't need to compete with these guys. As long as you just have a minimum deterrent, that's going to be good enough to deter a nuclear war, in which case we will enter an experiment that has never been tried before, you know, by us. Can we coexist with a – will they permit us to continue to exist a totalitarian states, you know, that have war-winning capabilities against us? And I think the answer is probably no, you know, because if they believed in minimum deterrence, they wouldn't be investing the vast resources they are in nuclear warfighting and war-winning capabilities.
Well, that's a question. I actually have a couple questions for you as soon as you're ready, but there's a couple things that have been sort of bugging me. All right. So the first thing, you said something I think incredibly significant that I want to focus on with the Cuban Missile Crisis, because I've watched the specials. I remember I've forgotten the actor who played him. I can see his face right now. But anyway, there's several specials on the Cuban Missile Crisis, and they never talk about the real reason. You know, and it's like Kennedy talked tough and Khrushchev blinked and they pulled their missiles out. Well, that never made sense to me. What I didn't know until just now, what you were saying, is that we had a 5-to-1 missile superiority. So in other words, the reason Khrushchev backed out and got the missiles out of Cuba and the launchers and everything else like that was because he could not have won a war with us even if he tried. With a 5-to-1 superiority, you know, you're not going anywhere. You know, it's just and that kind of, you know, and superiority is a good thing. I mean, we're the good guys. We're supposed to have superiority. To not have superiority makes sense. Nobody won a war because they had less equipment than the other side. Nobody won a war because they weren't as technologically advanced. Nobody's won anything unless they were both technologically and usually numerically superior to win that war. So the fact that we had a stronger military than Russia at the time would make sense that Russia would back down. I mean, what choice did they have? They couldn't go to nuclear war with us, because we'd win.
And Kennedy put a sweetener into it, too, by agreeing to withdraw our intermediate-range ballistic missiles from Turkey
in Jupiter
exchange
missiles, right?
For them taking – so, yeah. But – yeah, and that was to be kept secret, okay, you know, under the deal, and it wasn't revealed until many years later, and I don't think it's an accident that the American public has been kept in the dark about both of those issues, because the people who surrounded Kennedy, well, Kennedy deserves credit, I mean, for the Minuteman buildup, all right, as president. The people he brought into government ultimately used the Cuban Missile Crisis to convince the president that arms control should be the path forward, okay? And giving up, they were the same administration that won the Cuban Missile Crisis because of superiority in the nuclear balance, ended up convincing itself that, oh, this is such a dangerous path we're on, you know, we need to embrace arms control and this concept of non-competition, get control of the arms race through arms control. And so the arms control narrative doesn't want you to know that the chief reason the Russians backed off was because of our superiority.
So that's
huge.
That
doesn't fit in with the arms control ideological agenda, okay?
Yeah.
And the other thing, of course, they don't like to talk about, and they never do in the movies, you know, which was the promise to the fact. We didn't just promise it, but we did it to take down our IRBMs in Turkey, because that diminishes the idea that the Russians, you know, it diminishes the idea that it was the, in effect, they kind of create this idea that it was really Kennedy's courageous personality or something. You know, they don't really give much of a rational explanation.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I've always wondered why they did it.
You're just left with the wisdom and Churchillian courage of John Kennedy standing up to the Russians. And that's what the Democrat Party and the left prefers. You know, not that he gave up anything, or And I think they'd even rather admit that he gave up something than to the superiority part, you know, which doesn't fit into their agenda.
Yeah, but those missiles weren't that good anyway, weren't they? They were sort of obsolete or old, or at least they weren't that effective, mid-range. And Turkey, would Turkey even have those missiles today? You know, do we have any other U.S. missiles? I mean, Turkey's NATO, but not really. Do we have any other defenses or missiles in Turkey?
We don't have missiles, but we've got tactical nuclear weapons at Incirlik Air Force Base in Turkey. And, I wrote an article about that when we were having problems with Turkey during the Trump administration. They were getting confrontational with us and anti-Israel and stuff like that. And I had suggested, well, maybe we should pull those tactical nuclear weapons out of Turkey, you know, because the government of Turkey might decide to claim them. And
that would be interesting.
I think it would still be a good idea to get them out of there, because the leadership of Turkey continues to drift away from us and in the direction of Russia. You know, Russia's trying to lure Turkey out of the NATO orbit, and they may be succeeding. In Turkey, for example, is buying military equipment from the Russians, advanced anti-surface-to-air missiles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't support us on some other issues, but that's kind of away from the bigger picture that we were talking about the article. I mean,
no, I know that. I've got a couple of things from it. Actually, there's a couple of other articles I want to get to real quickly.
Why don't you? I'll just shut up and you can go ahead.
I appreciate your comments, but I get anxious to get a couple of issues. The other one is something that's in the article, not directly as I'm going to state it, but I want your opinion on this, that Russia and China have superior nuclear weapons than we do. They've got third, fourth generation weapons. They know they have better stuff than we have right now. So the question is, why are they competing? Why do they keep building? And my suspicion is that Russia doesn't trust China. China doesn't trust Russia. They're sort of strategic partners, as they say, for now. But just like, in World War II, Nazi Germany and communist Russia, you got two ultra-leftist totalitarian dictatorships. You know, who's king of the hill? Who's the top? You know, what is going on between Russia and China, and can we influence that conflict even more to say, you know, we tell Russia, well, you better watch China, because they're going to, you know, if anybody's going to take us over, it's probably them. Then you tell China, well, you know, you think you're tough, but it's really the Russians who are going to get us. You know, I mean, we can play the where are the psyops? Where's the stuff? But what is really going on between Russia and China? Are they, in fact, competing with each other as they both continually race for bigger and better or smaller and better nuclear weapons, as we're still talking about arms control and kumbaya and, you know, and smelling the flowers and all the other things that our State Department's doing? What do you think?
Well, I make that very point in my article, you know, that, mm-hmm. you know, that I think that the reason the Russians and, or part of the reason, at least, maybe most of the reason that the Russians and Chinese are involved in a nuclear arms racing, you know, is because they know that in the long run, mm-hmm. they're going to be fighting each other, you know, for control of the world. And
right.
the arms racing that's going on is really between themselves. We, the Pentagon, we are so used to the U.S., you know, being the dominant actor in the world order, mm-hmm. that we think that anything they're doing is aimed at us. And what I suggest in that sentence is that, you know, maybe Moscow and Beijing have already decided that the United States is on the ash heap of history, and they're really arms racing against each other for ultimate control of the world. But then I go on to observe that I think that this is the real situation. Well, it's not either or. I mean, I do think they've got that in the back of their minds, because they take a longer view of things than we do, you know, that they are ultimately going to come into conflict with each other. But we're still around. You know, I think their nuclear crosshairs, they do have an alliance. They're cooperating diplomatically, technologically. You know, they do exercise together and do strategic exercises together. I think they've got their crosshairs on us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but I think they're less and less worried about us, you know, because as the disparity, as their strength, their nuclear strength, and their other capabilities grows and grows, and we don't respond. You know, we get relatively weaker and weaker, and now we've got this, you know, has engaged in a number of acts, not just Afghanistan, but the failure to respond to the cyber attacks on Colonial Pipeline and other critical infrastructures that followed that, you know, our opening, leaving our border wide open, you know, this globalist idea that our own self-condemnation, makes us less and less threatening to them. You know,
well, that's what I was arguing.
The administration that's in charge is not a patriotic, nation.
Yeah.
We've got an attitude of self-condemnation and surrender. Still, at some point, the totalitarian powers might want to make it official, and wade in our blood. You know, to demonstrate that they are, you know, the dominant actors. Although if they follow their own, you know, if they adhere to, you know, part of the point I was trying to make in the article as well, though,
mm-hmm. yep.
is that, you know, the value of nuclear weapons is so great precisely because you can win World War III or the new Cold War without having to go to war with them. You know, if our posture becomes so undermined, and we continue to do things like pull B-52 bomber wings out of Guam and retreat everywhere, our allies are going to look at that and realize the world order has changed. It's already changed.
I think they realize they're in Afghanistan.
Strategic partner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Order has already changed. And Afghanistan, who knows? That might be it. Afghanistan might be our Czechoslovakia, 1938,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You know, even though it's a small country. Seems unimportant, but symbolically very important, you know, because it was a measure of the commitment of the free world to defend itself and to defend its interests. So we might already have passed that tipping point where we've got a transformation in the world order and you can, you know, the bad guys can win and we can lose without an actual war. You know, that's what
But we can flip back and forth. I'm not, Reagan changed from Carter. I mean, Carter were much weaker, and under Reagan we were much stronger. I've got 8 minutes, and I've got two articles I want to cover briefly with you. One's from Newsweek, which is talking about North Korea. And it says sanctions. Oh no, wait a minute. Here it goes. Newsweek. Rebecca Clapper. I wonder if she's related to the other one in the government. 9/24, same day. Okay. North Korea willing to talk to South Korea, U.S. If both drop some sanctions. I'm just getting the first little bit here. It says North Korea has said it's willing to resume talks with South Korea and the United States if both countries drop some of the crippling economic sanctions against it. Kim Yo-jong, sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, issued a statement Friday offering to resume talks, but only if certain conditions are met. In her statement, Kim Yo-jong mentioned arranging talks to create an official declaration ending the Korean War. That's interesting. Nam Sung-wook, I'm not good with my Korean names, a professor at Korea University in South Korea, said North Korea is attempting to indirectly pressure Seoul into lifting sanctions as South Korea is pushing for officially declaring the war's end. What's going on there? Is that showing up on your radar?
Sure. What's going on there is nothing. That isn't business as usual. You know, sure,
okay.
The North Koreans would like us to drop sanctions and get involved in negotiations so they can cheat on that. But I want to return to your kind of flippant comment about, oh, that kind of thing has happened before and we've gone from Carter to Reagan.
As if
America of today in the 21st century with statues being torn down and the universities in the possession of the far left is basically where we were in the Carter administration. All we need is a change of a president.
No, I didn't mean that at all.
That's what it sounds like you said.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Well, I misspoke on that.
I vehemently disagree with that. This is not the America of the 1980s, my friend. You know, this America is the rot, you know, has penetrated into our major institutions of education. It's everywhere, as you can see. And our adversaries see that too. So, you know.
No, and I was only trying to compare.
We're not just one president away from being able to turn this around.
Yeah. No, I was just comparing Carter and Reagan. I did not mean to say that the situation today is anything like it was then. It's completely different. So, you know, I'm sorry if that was misunderstood. That's not what I meant. The last article here, and this is kind of interesting, this is the Onion News, and there are other sources reporting the same thing. This is John Bolton. This is Bolton. Taliban may seize nuclear weapons from Pakistan, says Pakistani military has radical Islamists in its ranks. Now, John Bolton, to me, is permanent war class. He always wants to be at war somewhere. So let me just do this real briefly so I can find. I guess it's the regular editorial. They don't give an author here. Former National Security Advisor John Bolton has stirred up the latest fears of war with claims of nuclear proliferation in Afghanistan. In an interview on Sunday, Bolton said the Taliban would be able to obtain nuclear weapons by expanding its influence into neighboring Pakistan. Pakistan claimed to have some nuclear warheads, although its nuclear status was not recognized by the UN. Bolton stressed key U.S. ally India could be put under pressure by the hostile Pakistan as well, along with China solidifying its ties with the Taliban. One more quick sentence here. The Taliban in control is a quote from, I guess this is Bolton. The Taliban in control of Afghanistan threatens the possibility of terrorists taking control of Pakistan too, and there are already a lot of radicals in the Pakistani military. If the whole country gets taken over by terrorists, I guess that's the Taliban, that means maybe 150 nuclear weapons in the hands of terrorists, which is a real threat to us and our friends. What do you make of John Bolton?
Well, I agree with what he said completely. I've written articles to that effect. You and I have had a conversation on your show when we were talking about what are the implications of the fall of Afghanistan. You know, I'm glad to see that John Bolton has arrived at the same conclusion I did. You know, earlier than him, you know, the point about not just the Taliban taking over Pakistan, but the fact, I think the more important point in what he says is about the, about Pakistan becoming self-radicalized. You know, the intelligence services in Pakistan are very closely allied with the Taliban. They're radical Islamists. The population of Pakistan is not moderate. You know, they, it's only in, like, just like in Afghanistan, you've got a, you know, small number of elites up at the top who have been Western educated, who are more moderate, but they are not even reliable allies to the United States. You know, they've got to keep the radical elements in their own country happy. You know, they've actually were allied with the Taliban all during our 20 years, you know, letting the Taliban come into Pakistani territory, using it as a safe haven, and then they would come out to kill Americans. Our good ally Pakistan allowed that to happen. And we didn't do anything about it. We didn't press them because we don't want to destabilize Pakistan, because every administration has understood that you could almost overnight have a coup d'etat in Pakistan that would turn it into another Iran, another radicalized Islamic state, but this one in possession of nuclear weapons. So Bolton is absolutely right. I don't agree with him on everything, but he is a good chess player in terms of thinking through, you know, what happens on the chessboard of international relations. What are the big, bigger issues? You know, he's one of the few that has made that point. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I have liked Bolton and even though he didn't get along with President Trump and all of that. Now, there are other things I disagree with him about, but I don't hold him in contempt the way, you know, most conservatives seem to these days. You know, he's a good strategic thinker.
Yeah, but I don't think his solutions. You know, I mean, he's got a good analysis of the problem. I mean, that's a huge threat. But I mean, no effort's been made to force the Biden insurrection to get our weapons back. You know, we've given the Taliban, you know, $85 billion worth of weapons that they can use against Pakistan if they want to. Or I see them more as cooperating, because I understand from Clay Lopez, the Taliban was created by Pakistan. So I think they're more allies than they are enemies. But the point is that I don't see the Taliban giving nuclear weapons to the Taliban, because they won't be controlled. And nations, as stupid as they are to get them, are usually smart enough not to let them be completely, you know, out in the open, like in the Mogadishu arms bazaar. So I'm just wondering about this. My problem with John Bolton has always been that I think he's part of the permanent war class, that he wants a war somewhere all the time. He wanted to go into Venezuela. You know, I think he wanted to keep the Syrian, you know, troops doing their thing there. I think there are ways to deal with this problem. This is a huge problem. We don't want the Taliban getting nuclear weapons. We didn't want them getting the $85 billion worth of weapons anyway. But I think he's advocating, I think this is about advocating us to go back into Afghanistan, to keep the war going in Afghanistan, to send the troops back in, and they're going to have to fight our own weapons. You know, I think that part of the reason
that's
of there was to...
Okay. Well, you're right about that criticism. Okay. You're right about that criticism. You know, Bolton was one of those who wanted us to stay in Afghanistan and keep fighting the war the way we had been fighting. It was a losing war. And that's an example of where I disagree with Bolton.
Okay.
So Bolton is spot on that that the nuclear weapons could come into the hands of terrorists. The more likely route is the route I described and that he alluded to, you know, which is that you could have a radical Islamist revolution in Pakistan now that the Taliban have triumphed, because radical Islamists everywhere are going to be heartened by the U.S. defeat. In fact, it will be considered a quote-unquote miracle, a sign, you know, that they are on the march and that this is the time, this may be the time, you know, to challenge the West. And something like that could lead either to self-radicalization in a coup d'etat in Pakistan, where overnight you get a terrorist organization within Pakistan, you know, in charge, or that the organizations friendly to the Taliban decide to support them by giving them an atomic bomb. I don't think that's as outlandish as many people suppose.
Yeah, I got to hold
no
you up here because
we're... No more outlandish than the idea that we would put tactical nuclear weapons in Turkey and hope and expect them never to take them over.
Yeah. I have to hold you up. We're literally out of time, but this has been a great hour, and we do have this hour available Monday, so I'm not going to have a guest at this time, but we don't have to stay the whole hour, but it's really great to get these issues covered. I want to thank you very much for coming on the show, as I do every week, and to be able to talk about these things, especially, like I say, even when we disagree, because I learn as much from that, if not more, than when we go over the things that we go over. Thank you, sir. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. That's it for today at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern. And we will see you then.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Gene.
Okay, thank you for having me.